Tell UWW.
I'm ready.
Hey, if you guys wouldn't mind, if you don't have your cell phones on silent, please do that now. All right, and we will go ahead and call this regularly scheduled Board of Supervisors meeting for Tuesday, July 18, 2017, to order. Couple notes on the agenda. First of all, the very first thing we're going to deal with after public comment is Supervisor Olson has asked for a point of personal privilege to make a statement before we get started today, so that'll come right after public comment. And then just before agency reports, Board, unless you have objection, we're going to pull consideration of awarding the bid for the Tedesco Environmental Learning Corridor up so that that can go ahead and get moving. And then one final note, if this meeting starts to drag on, we've got a mayor and a couple city personnel that probably need to be out of here right at the noon range. So if we get to the 11:30 hour and we're not making great progress on the agenda, we might pull that urban renewal area program applicants up and have that conversation so that they can get on with their day. Any objection to any of that?
None.
With that, I'd ask if everybody please join the Board as we honor America with the Pledge of Allegiance.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
All right, first item is public comment number one. This is an opportunity for anybody to comment. We say on anything on this agenda, but we also are a little loose on that. If anybody would like to comment on anything, now's a great chance. Dave, I'd ask if you want to make your comments as part of the Couser presentation. That would be great. Arden, you mentioned you'd like to talk, but you want to wait until the end. Is there anybody else who has anything to bring to this Board at this point? All right, and seeing no one moving to the microphone, we'll move on to the first item of business. Laura, you asked for an opportunity to make a statement.
I did. Thank you, and thank you to Marty. Thank you to everyone in the audience today. During the recent weeks, I've spent a lot of time reflecting on the feedback and suggestions generated about my first 6 months' service as a supervisor and my genuine appreciation to all who have commented. The remarks have been mixed, from praise for my commitment to major policy issues like housing, transportation, and clean water, to dismay at my direct, passionate communication style and my hands-on approach when working with policy and program development or addressing service issues. I want the employees of Story County to know that I am literally heartbroken to be told that morale in the county has dropped since my arrival, and that my style and approach have made a few employees feel devalued, intimidated, or worried about their future with the county. I have been assured by the county attorney that I have not broken any laws. It does appear that as I have not handled my enthusiasm for change and drive for progress as well as I should have in this transition period. And I am so sorry. Please know that I am taking actions, some personal, some tied to my role as a supervisor, which I and others believe will help alleviate concern, reduce misunderstandings, and enhance morale. There are differing opinions about policy, programming, and administrative rules and priorities among your three supervisors. This means sometimes we have to make comments, hold discussions, and debate issues at the board table that would include a staffing component. Be assured these discussions are about what each of us believes is the right approach to deliver the best services possible to Story County residents. In no way do I hold any malice toward or harbor any ulterior motives about any individual staff member or the staff collectively at Story County. I look forward to working together with all of you in a more mutually understanding environment going forward. I hope you're able to forgive me and do the same. Thank you for your time.
Okay. So that leads us right into the first item on our agenda. That is discussion and consideration of open records requests from the Ames Tribune and now the Des Moines Register. County Attorney Jessica Reynolds, will you just kind of tee us up and tell the board what we're talking about and what we're considering today?
Well,
Well, good morning to the board. On July 11th, the county received an open records request from the Ames Tribune, and it's a request for my legal opinion to the board that I gave to you when we went into closed session last week. And then on July 14th, we received a like request from the Des Moines Register. And so those are the issues that are before you today. And essentially, the board's decision today will be weighing the public policy benefit of the public's right to know what's going on with its elected officials versus any potential issues to the county. In my opinion, as county attorney, there is no legal harm to the county by the release of my opinion.
Jessica, just for our information, if there's no legal harm to the county, what other rationale would the county use to not release this information?
Well, there is a potential confidential exception in 22.7, and basically there's a 90-day period that we could hold the information before its release, since we were able to use it to go into closed session. And that is Iowa Code Section 22.7, sub 60.
Okay, thank you. So next what I'd like to do is I'd like to hear a representative from the Ames Tribune here and a representative from the Des Moines Register. Since the Ames Trib made the request first, we hear from you first on the rationale that you believe is appropriate for this to be released.
First of all, good morning, everyone. Thanks for the opportunity to come and address this request. Some of you already know me, but for the sake of the record, my name is Michael Crum, and I'm the editor for the Ames Tribune. And again, I'd like to thank everyone for this opportunity. What we're asking for is the document, the county attorney's legal opinion, that was discussed during the closed session that was held by this board on July 11th. We believe that based on a comment that Supervisor Sanders made prior going to the closed session, that he indicated that the purpose of the session was to discuss actions of one supervisor in ignoring the legal advice of the county attorney, and that that closed session followed the June 27th board meeting where a member of the supervisors, against the advice of the county attorney, unsuccessfully tried to file a complaint of insubordination against the county employee. We believe because of those two things, that the closed session is related to that board meeting of June 27th, and that's why we're asking that this document be released. We understand that the state's public information law does allow governing bodies to keep certain information confidential, but it also gives governing bodies the authority to release those documents. If those documents are related to the June 27th board meeting, it is our belief the county would not create any additional risk or harm to itself, as already stated, because the events of that meeting have already been well publicized, and they were recorded, and the meeting, I believe, was posted on the county's website for the public to see. Because of that, we do believe that the public's right to know outweighs the potential risks to the county in this situation, and we ask that you approve our request to release those documents that were discussed during the July 11th closed session. Thank you.
Perfect. Any questions for Michael before he gets away?
No, I think he was very clear in his rationale for asking.
And Jessica, just to be clear, so I only remember one document in our closed session. We're only talking about one document.
That's correct. Then that would be the document that I created. Okay. I gave copies to the board, my five-page opinion.
Perfect. Laura's anything?
I'm going to wait. I believe it was the register.
Yep. The Des Moines Register has the same request, and I believe we got Kim Norvell here.
Yep. Hi, Kim Norvell. I'm with the Des Moines Register. I would just say that this document, I think, will answer some questions that the public has about supervisor conduct or potential litigation against an elected official. So I think it just weighs down to the public's right to know what's happening with their elected body.
Perfect. Thank you. So, Laura, it's my intent now, and if you want to go ahead and make your statement or comment, that would be appropriate. Otherwise, I would open it up to members of the audience if you have anything to add or any comments to make on this matter. Okay. Okay, so you need no one.
Sure. First of all, I will move that we make this document available to the Tribune and to the Des Moines Register and to any other entities requesting to see the document. My comments are, is when you see it, you will find that it is more comprehensive than you believe. It is addressed to all of us. And items, and in fact, let me look, because I made some notes here just for my kind of pointing out here, that there are, of the eight items, there are two that directly address a situation with me, one of which clears me of a charge of discrimination, okay? And there's another one that reminds us all. It's based on some constituent services I offered, but I think it's a good reminder to all of us about how we have to plan constituent services. And then the other four are reminders to all of us. So well, it's not the best day of my life, okay? I certainly support the situation about releasing it to the media. Once I heard from the county attorney that she felt that it in no way opened us up to any further liability, and given what the document says itself, I think it's wholly appropriate. So I made my motion and my comments.
Do I have a second?
So, Jessica, there is no downside on litigation for the county by releasing this document?
The information contained in my document is available to either to people at the county who know about the things that are going on, or on our YouTube channel. So I don't see how it further endangers the county litigation-wise from where we are currently.
I second that.
All right, we've got a motion and a second. So, Lawrence, I just want to be clear here. So you take this document. It's a five-page document with 8 points. You take this document as County Attorney Reynolds addressing these concerns to all of us, or based on your actions and your behavior for all eight of us?
I believe that my actions and behavior precipitated this situation. There's no question about that. But there are other issues going on. And I think that the items that are identified in 1, 2, having to do with what our powers are and us acting as a board versus individually, are very key for all three of us to keep in mind. I certainly believe items 3 and 5, dealing with open meetings, open records, is once again very key for all of us to remind us how easy it is back there when all three of us have an offices and we're in and out all day to have discussions that can in fact generate into or maybe come close to the line. I feel reassured that in the instances I've taken and asked our county attorney about, that there's not been a violation. So, and I believe she told us in closed session that all of the inquiries that all three of us have gone at various times to talk to the county attorney about, there have not been violations. There also have been some public meetings where topics as they start to discuss where exactly is the line about when we're debating and we're actually soliciting information from the public. So, yeah, so I do feel actually that it's a good reminder for all of us. But there's no question that my actions have precipitated a concern about liability or litigation in one particular instance.
So I take this that your actions and behavior has opened us up on 8 different points that were made here. And I also take exception with the idea that by County Attorney Reynolds investigating one employee's complaint against you and finding that it did not rise to that level, I don't think that should be taken for 1 second that we're not in severe legal jeopardy. I mean, it just feels like, Lawrence, that you're trying to gloss all this over and say, well, it's about all of us, when in reality it's not about all of us.
Well, and we have a valid disagreement about what the contribution would be for the rest of the supervisor's team here. We have that valid disagreement. With the risk of liability going forward, record, and I addressed this and really hoped, really want to reemphasize this in my statement I made. This is in part about style and interpretation of style. There is no doubt that I am an abrupt person. There is no doubt that I am a direct person. None of that whatsoever. So in me taking steps to go ahead and counter that and to mitigate that, and in the county working with me to take steps, in fact, one of what they suggested that I had already volunteered partially to do in that closed session, I think it's going to be better for us all. But for all of this to have been cast upon me without taking into reflection what may have been occurring behind this wall here, that is correct, Rick. Okay, that I feel that there are other people and other attitudes, other styles that have contributed to where we've ended up today.
Go ahead, Mark.
Morris, you're hitting me with that because I think when you say such in a broad, sweeping way, would you wish to make an accusation here and now?
Not against you, Marty. I think it's Rick and I who clash. We both have very, very strong personalities. You are certainly more tempered, more thoughtful about it. So as far as an accusation goes, Rick and I have very different styles. And that has resulted in a situation where the expectations and what's projected have varied. I was shocked to hear that the fact that I might show on my face discomfort or anger about something but never utter a word was considered a hostile gesture. So I'm working very hard to not move my face anymore. I mean, reality of that is. So I'm being as honest as I can here. So that is my statement.
County Attorney Reynolds, can you provide any clarity to this? So there seems to be some debate about where these items in this letter came from. Can you provide us, you wrote it, can you provide us any clarity?
Have we voted on the release of this?
No, would you prefer if we go ahead and do that?
Please.
Okay.
Further discussion. Olson.
Aye.
Chief.
Aye.
Sanders, aye. Can you clarify anything for us? So this is now a public document. Can you give us context in any of this?
Correct. So I have been involved with assisting the board in a legal capacity, and we've been going through some struggles as client and attorney, and it was my decision based on the actions of Supervisor Olson to create this document and meet with the board in closed session.
Okay. I think this is a really, really solid demonstration of the struggles that we have right now, Boris. It's not so frustrating that you don't get it. It's really frustrating that you don't get that you don't get it. I come in every day, and I hope we're going to make progress toward the goal. In fact, your biggest complaint that you've had about me so far that I've heard is that I'm too nice, that I was too nice to you, and somehow that set you off.
No, that was not what the comment was. That was not what the comment was. But I know there's a lot of people here who are interested in other items on the agenda. Do you want to?
Sure.
Yeah. So that was not what the comment was.
I would have to say I see this as an installment of a book not yet written. And we are probably going to, the likelihood from what I have seen, what I have heard, we'll probably end up in litigation. Mm-hmm. So we're not done with this by any means. This will only start a new chapter. And I hope through that evolution, you have some real heartfelt turning into yourself, and you realize that Rick did not do this, Marty did not do this, another county client did not do this.
Okay, document is available to the public. That takes care of that item on the agenda. Thank you, everybody. Next item on our agenda is discussion and consideration of recommendation for the DNR regarding an animal feeding operation construction permit application and master matrix for Cowser Cattle Company. And I'll ask Bill to come on up. And Bill, anybody you want with you, and I'll just set the table like this. So Bill Kowser is a long-standing cattle producer and farmer in Story County, has always been at the cutting edge of providing service, and now Mr. Kowser would like to go to no-till practices in his operation, which everything we know about no-till practices is more environmentally friendly. The reality is the Master Matrix does not quite recognize that this is a positive that we'd like to see have done. So, Bill, I'll turn it over to you to walk us through your Master Matrix. Once you get done with your presentation, we're going to ask Matt Corey from Board of Health to come up and just tell us whether, when they looked at your scoring, whether they agreed with your scoring or not, and then we'll move on from there. Good?
Well, thank you guys for considering this, and this has been probably a two-year process as far as figuring out if this is something we needed to do and should do. And so 2 years ago, I met with Paul Petiti, who writes most of the petitions or most of the permits for the state, if we should do something, and he fully agreed that we should step out and try to change some of this. And I'll go into the changes. As when we put up the last building, basically the matrix covers the last building. So in a sense, what I've had is two manure management plans. And let me go into that very briefly, because I don't want to really get this really confused or whatever. So, for instance, on my open pens and my north barn today, we can apply on the ground. We don't have to disc it in. We don't have to incorporate it. And on the new building, under that master matrix, we have to apply it and have it covered within 24 hours. Well, this was fine when we started out with this process in 2011 because practices were like that. We still did a lot of tillage at that point, but things have changed. I look at the millennials that have come back to our farm, and Tim is in here someplace, and he has changed our farming operation basically into a no-till operation. So through that, in the last 2 or 3 years, I've been working with EPI of Washington trying to put together a project to help educate, you might say, the American consumer and people as far as the value of manure. And when we look at manure today, we have manure being exported all over the state because it needs to go where it needs it the most. We have counties that are saturated, that have applied, and Becky can answer to that a lot easier than I can. Oh, I want to introduce Becky Saxon. She's my consultant from Twin Lakes Environmental Services, and she's helped me through this. And so when we look at what we'd like to do, and I'll just jump right into the weeds here, there's 50 different criteria, or 40 different criteria you can check going through the matrix. 26E is the one I would like to change and eliminate. And what this is where I have to incorporate this manure within 24 hours of application from this one barn. What this does by keeping two separate plans here is I have to track one barn versus the other barn. Now, since we've done this, we've gone ahead and incorporated everything to date. So that way there's just clarity with what happens. When we look at what's happened the last few years with no-till and with the research that we've done with EPA and the Iowa Department of Natural Resources, this is something when you have solid manure like we do, because it has corn stalks and bedding in it, we go out, we gather the corn stalks, and then we take manure back to those fields. So this is not liquid manure, it's dry manure, because we can stockpile this manure in the summertime and we're not able to spread it on the fields. And what also has changed is that today there's it's called 200A that the legislature put in, and now today Heart of Iowa, or Key Co-op, is a broker for manure. And I can actually go through them as my broker and sell manure to neighbors, if we so choose, to try to create another revenue stream. When we look at what's happened with agriculture in the past couple of years, I mean, we've tried to do different things where we're trying to add value to those corn stalk acres. I mean, how many different products can we pull out of that cornfield and then take that manure back as far as the fertility value that's in it and where it belongs? Key Co-op here is really going to help us in the future design different projects that we can use this for. We're looking at composting. We're looking, working with a lime guy to be able to package this maybe someday. after we utilize it on the land that we have ourselves. So I'm asking to eliminate 26E, and we picked up other places in the matrix to pick those points back up. And so when I look at the future now, it's giving me options for that product. It's going to create a different revenue stream than we've ever had before. I've got my manure applicators here, the professional applicators. And today we can variable rate this manure, just like we can fertilizer from our key co-op when we have it spread on. We know exactly what's in every pound of that as far as nutrient value. And what we're finding is that, and I guess what I'd like to do, can I pass these out just so you've got them? I'd kind of like to walk through this real quick. I put this packet together so that I think it's important that you understand the progress that's taking on in the farming community today. And you look at some of the guys that are sitting out here in the audience, I mean, they're on the cutting edge of a lot of the different projects that we've been working on. The first part there is Tim was on the front cover of Corn and Soybean Digest last year, and it shows the cover crops that we're using today. And when you were out and visited our farm, we showed you what those cover crops are doing and how they're holding those nutrients in the soils. When you go to the next page, the Animal Agriculture Discussion Group. This is a group that I've been sitting on for 3 years with EPA out of Washington. And what it does, it just gives you different places to go to learn about different livestock operations, whether it's feathers, pigs, or cattle. There's also a sheet here that gives you different websites you can go to on EPA. And I think probably the most important piece that you're going to see in here is called the beneficial uses of manure and the environmental protection. And this is not just a collaborative effort with cattlemen. I mean, when you look up in the top left-hand corner, the National Cattlemen, the U.S. Poultry, the United Egg, National Pork, and National Milk Producers have all signed on to this with EPA. So we feel very confident in what we've done here. And then on the final page, it talks about incorporating manure and the challenges you have with it. With these heavy rains, the nutrients, you know, don't flow off by themselves. They attach themselves to the particles of soil, and that's how they get away. So every time we disturb that soil, you know, we have a chance to get a heavy rain for that to wash away. With the cover crop that we're leaving on there and the corn stover that we're leaving on there, and we don't want to till bean ground today. I mean, I can remember as a little kid, I stood on a 630 John Deere. We plowed all our bean fields.
Yeah.
I mean, take this spring, for instance. When you look at the cover crops and the management systems that these guys are using today, we don't see those black days where the wind's blowing anymore, do we?
You don't have the black dishes in the winter.
No.
It's really shocking.
No. So, anyway, what we're doing is asking that we remove 26E from that matrix, and then we pick up points in other places. So I could go on and on about this, and Becky is here. She's been through this many times. Just to understand how we all went through this, about 6 weeks ago, Gene Tinker, who used to work at the IDNR, we met with Margaret, just to make sure that...
Margaret Payne is our director of health.
Yes, yes. To tell her, because she helped me through the matrix the first time. And so we went to her, and I brought Gene along, and Gene was here with the meeting where we talked about the matrix here a couple months ago. And I think everybody's very comfortable with Gene because of his knowledge and his knowledge base. So we sat down with Margaret, and the first thing that she said, well, you can't change your matrix. Well, I think Becky would explain that this happens all the time. And I think it's important that this group that's in here understands that as technology changes and farming practices changes, we can't be intimidated. We have to be able to come in front of you and promote this and say, you know, this has changed. We need to change this. So I'm going to stop there. If there's anything Becky would like to add, or we'll just open this up.
Yeah, so Becky, I would like it if you or Bill, either one, would just take us through so the piece that came out of the master matrix, where did it get replaced? If you could just
so basically, we took out the 26E, and that's saying that we would always incorporate manure on the same date as land application, okay? Because at this point in time, he's not able to do that any longer. And we put in a couple things that he's always had in place on his farm, but we just never took points. He never took points for in his previous matrix. We put into the plan a worker protection plan.
that we didn't have in his previous matrix. Okay. So this is, and it's basically something he's used, you know, since he's had his site. Okay. But at this point, we went ahead and we put it in the plan because it's a worker safety plan, which makes sense. You know, I mean, legitimately, when we work with family farmers, if you work with family farmers, you know that when we hire people, we want to make sure that they understand how our farm works and what we're doing with our farms, okay? So when we do these kind of things, we want to make sure, so when we hire an employee, we're going to say, okay, so when there's a tornado, this is where you're going to go. These are all the different things that we're going to go through with our employees, and we're going to make sure they understand how to handle cattle, how to handle any issues that we may have on our farm. So that is one of the big points that we took on this that we didn't have before. We also took, do you remember what else we took out? We left in most of the points that he had had previously.
Right.
He has some very, it's very simple, the way that he has things done. But we basically left in, we didn't change things. Okay, this is just something simple that
we
had.
So we simply needed to replace.
We had to replace that. So basically, and then we put in there, basically one of the things that we took points for was we have an employee that's paid above the Iowa Department of Workforce Development's median pay, which is beneficial not only to your community but to the state of Iowa. So we also took points for that as well. So basically, we just replaced the points we took out.
And so at the end of the day, you had a passing score before you went this route, but it included incorporating it.
Exactly.
Taking that out would move you below a passing score unless you added some other components.
Exactly.
You added them. You now say you have a passing score.
We did.
Perfect. Mm-hmm. So now what I'm going to do, unless you guys have anything you want to add, is I'm going to turn to Matt Corey, and I'm going to ask Matt for you to come up and simply confirm not affirm that we agree with the score that they have here.
After a few resubmittals, there was a few questions on well setbacks and everything like that, but with the newest submitted matrix, we agree with the scoring.
Okay, thank you. And I think you make an important point. Many people try to view this as some kind of pass or fail test. You get one chance, and if it doesn't all work out, you fail, and that's not what the master matrix has ever been intended to be. It's intended to be a worksheet to have producers work on achieving certain things that are important to the community. So thank you guys so much for working through the process to get to this point. You and Margaret do see this as a passing score at this point.
Correct.
Okay, thank you, Matt. So at this point, first of all, thank you to everybody who is here for this topic of conversation. This is both sides of, there's passion on both sides of this. It's great to see people who are here because they care about where we're headed with soil health and productivity and all the things that we do. Is there anybody that would like to address this? We don't have a public hearing today because the calendar didn't work out for us to be able to have a public hearing, but we're going to treat it that way. If there's anybody who would like to make comments, please come on up. Yeah, Dave. Introduce yourself first, Dave.
You want me to sit or stand or
something? Whatever you're comfortable doing.
Okay. Dave Struthers. I live at 72865 110th Street at Collins. Similar to the Cowsers, I handle a lot of my manure in solid form. I also have liquids in my swine operation. Growing up, we always heard about N, P, and K, nitrogen, phosphorus, and potash. We have learned a lot more in the last 10 to 15 years about soil health and the values of manure, organic matter, all the micronutrients and microbes and how they interact in the soil to make it better. It helps keep the soil from being eroded as easily. And no-till practices and cover crops just add that much more of a layer to that. So I am totally in support of the Cowser family doing this. I have an operation that is not of the size to be required by law to have a manure management plan, but a couple of years ago I purchased a tractor that can go twice as fast down the road so I can transport my manure to the fields that need it worse, because I want that benefit on all my fields to keep those nutrients working for my advantage and for the advantage of the people downstream from me, that I'm not creating any water pollution. So I see this as a great step forward.
Thank you. Anybody else wishing to address this item? So I'd say this, because since Bill's here, I got to give him credit. And Bill, I don't always give you credit when I say this, but you're the first one I heard say nutrient reduction strategy is a misnomer. We're not trying to reduce nutrients in our soil. We're trying to keep them in our soil. And so you called it the nutrient retention strategy. And I've used that on multiple occasions. Like I say, if I had to give you a nickel every time I used it, you'd be getting something, but I'm not doing that. But since you're here, I'll give you complete credit for coining that phrase. Is there anybody else who would like to address this today? If not, the board will go ahead and take action. All right, board, the scoring that Couser has is 440 points, which is a passing score. That's the same score that our Board of Health sees. If we want to pass that on with the passing score, we would indicate that, and this would move on to DNR. Do I have a motion as such?
I move consideration or recommendation for the DNR of the animal feeding operation, construction permit application, and master matrix for the Couser Cattle Company, 620th Avenue, Nevada, Section 19 in Richland Township.
I second.
A motion second. Further discussion?
None.
I did have one comment from a citizen, just passing it on, is the citizen was pleased that the DNR had asked you to go back and rescore. That was it.
Yeah, and I don't believe it was DNR that asked you to rescore. I believe it was when you were working with Margaret James in our Board of Health that there were some questions about scoring, and you guys worked together to get to the end of this process.
I'm just passing on with the person.
Okay. Anything further?
None.
Chee.
Aye.
Olson.
Aye.
Sanders. Aye. It passes. Bill, thank you so much. Everybody's here. If you got some
questions. I think I'm closing.
Sure, come on up. Absolutely.
I can just stand here and say it. I tell you, this really came about from our meeting when we opened this thing up a few months ago and we wanted to talk about it. And I remember, Laura, you really started something here that I think we need to continue to work on. I invited you out, and I thank you for coming out. I had an Iowa State group out that day, and I said, please just come and sit in the back of the room and go through my presentation, and let me show you how this really works. And what really started this off, we were walking back, and you and I were walking along, and you made a comment to me that you didn't realize I was a CAFO. Now, I don't take that critically. I just, all of a sudden, the bells and whistles went off, and I put together that meeting, the educational seminar, where I just want to thank all the county workers came out and we went through this whole process so you understand what's happening in Story County. Brian Sampson was there and he sat with us too. And I think this is something that we're going to continue to do every year or maybe every other year as new people come into our county to make sure that you come out and understand what we as farmers are doing in here. The other reason is we can't be intimidated by this master matrix. I mean, that's the fear that goes through everyone when this happens, or to revisit it if your operation changes. This is the process. This is the legal process to do. So I want to emphasize here that if I look out in this crowd, I can see six people that their sons are coming back. Livestock is going to help them get back. You're going to have more matrixes to visit here in the future. And I want you to know that we're supporting you in those decisions. And anytime you have a question, ask us first. Nancy apologizes for not being here today because she's sitting in Des Moines on EPC commission meetings. Now, I think you all know what EPC is. It's the Board of Directors for the Iowa Department of Natural Resources. And Doris, excuse me, but ICCI is down there bringing hundreds of people in, many people in, with a sign-up sheet to revisit the matrix because they don't think it's tough enough. And I refuse to believe that. I think everything we have in the matrix today applies. I mean, it just doesn't fit the cattle guys sometimes. It doesn't fit a chicken operation sometimes. But there's enough things in there. As technology comes along, as these new buildings come along, they're going to do nothing but get better. So I want to reassure you that through science and through technology, we're going to continue to improve this and show you a leadership spot in Story County. And I think Story County can take a leadership role there. So thank you very much.
Bill, we appreciate you being a leader in all this and really appreciate the producers being in. Yes, sir.
Hold up. For the record, explain your acronym
to Confined Feeding Operation. Confined Animal Feeding Operation. I'm sorry. I just feel I have to be. I lived this way your whole life. And I do have to say that Gene Tinker was let go 2 weeks ago. Through budget constraints, I mean, I feel really bad because when he sat down with us and he explained, he knew every answer. And so that's a real loss to the Iowa Department of Natural Resources. I don't know how he was in charge of the AFOL, the Animal Feeding Operations of Iowa. I don't know how they're going to cover that today, but you see Gene just thanking for his service for the last 20 years. He's a true asset to the livestock industry.
Absolutely. Thank you, Bill.
Yeah. One moment. Yeah. Excuse me, also. Talk just a little bit about if you're a crop farmer, you buy all of your inputs for your crop as commercial fertilizers, insecticides, herbicides. They don't have to go through this process to grow their crops, produce their crops. Yeah. Livestock producers are being much more diligent, much more watched, and care a ton about what the soils are like, what the water's like. So.
Yeah, and Paul, thank you so much. Bill, I'm going to ask you to come back over to the microphone to address that. I think it's a point worth making, absolutely, that the commercial people putting commercial fertilizer on, there's not requirements and restrictions on them like there are for our people using natural.
I'll just be real brief because most of the individuals sitting here understand what we're doing. We're never going to put on more than we need. It's the economic value is not there. I look at most of the guys in this room, we're putting on nitrogen two or three times a season in the spring now. A lot of fall application has gone away. Now, there's research that shows that there is really no loss from that, but why would you put a dollar bill out in the field and then think it's going to be there in the spring, depending on what happens with weather conditions and events? So, Paul, I appreciate you doing that. And, you know, anything, these guys in here that have permits, this is all on the website. My whole world is open to you as far as what we're doing out there. And when I, my fear is that someday, but thank goodness we've got the key co-ops of the world that help farmers get through when they buy commercial fertilizer. No, you don't need this here. No, you need this here. And the variable rate technology, Paul, as you brought up, that's something that's huge because it saves us so many dollars.
Good.
But, Laura, thank you for coming out because it really meant a lot to take you through that. And if you ever have a question, you can call any one of these guys in this room. They'd love to have you out there.
I will. Thank you. In fact, I don't know if you know, but I went out to Brian Sampson also to see a different operation. And in that discussion, Brian and I talked about at some point in the future organizing a couple of coffees. Mm-hmm. I have extended that offer to some people in ICCI. One person has indicated yes so far. I believe a second one would. And the point would be to sit down and have coffees without any screaming, without any signs, without any pointing of fingers, but to have a dialogue. So I'll let you know if we get a critical mass there to have that happen.
Well, it's interesting because when I go to Washington, especially on the ethanol issues, they never put me in front of people that like me. They always put me in front of people that don't care for my business. And I think that's our job today, is if you don't care for our business, at least let us help explain our business so you have a better understanding of what's going on. Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Thanks. Thanks.
Bill, of course, I think that would be phenomenal if you could put that together. Very, very helpful if we could put those coffees together. And thank you for that. Anything further for us today before we move on? Bill, thank you very much.
I got a question for Laura.
Yes.
Are you familiar with this ICCI?
Yes, I'm a member of it.
Okay,
yeah.
I'm not.
Uh-huh.
But I've heard things, I guess, I'm on the agricultural side.
Yes.
Do you feel there's a lot of misconceptions within that as to how, you know, we presented some great candid thoughts here today, and I feel like Bill does that, you know, we don't have the resources to be throwing waste to the soil, and we care about the environment very personally. Do the ICCI members understand that? I guess maybe you'll give us a little bit of
an
idea.
Boy, you're asking me to speak for a very diverse group of people, okay? Kind of like
can
the
make
other
a statement
way.
Before you answer? Yeah. Uh-huh. Remember what Gene Tinker said? He said, guess what? There's fish in the streams today. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So we have made improvements.
Um,
because it's a diverse group, there's concerns ranging from antibiotic use to actually how far does the surface water carry to underground, et cetera. Okay. And I think that ICCI, and one reason I joined is I don't agree with everything. Like, I don't agree with everything about anybody or anything, probably, okay? Is that they're a voice. If we can get the dialogue going locally in this county, that's all I feel I have any energy for, maybe this board has any energy for, is for better understanding for both sides about what's done, what's not, what is voluntary right now versus what ends up happening sometimes with, you know, the push for, well, voluntary doesn't seem to be working, so regulatory. And it's a huge issue. I mean, Bill just pointed out, Gene gave a very visual example of an area where we think improvement has happened. But there are other questions. I did a lot on the internet to read about no-till for this today. Okay, so it's a long dialogue, but it's there's got to be some kind of more neighbor-to-neighbor discussion and more local, so that the addressing of all of it. All right, and so. Giving them an opportunity to look at your facts, asking you to take an opportunity to look at what you would call their facts, or, you know, that if you're going to discuss science, let it all be on the table. I think that would be good.
And I want to make one, you know, since we're talking about ICCI, it's been very challenging for me. Nancy's been on the EPC commission for 6 years. She's been escorted to her car by highway patrolmen 5 times because of her safety. If you could take a message back to those people that, you know, I would sit down in front of anybody in the room as long as you're not yelling and screaming right off the bat and bring science and facts to me. But when you start picking on my wife, and, I mean, she's gotten really thick-skinned over the years, but that's the reason we can't keep some of these people on those great commissions. I mean, it's governor-appointed position because it's so difficult when people come in yelling and screaming and bring their kids in. It's horrible. And so how do we change that movement so that when they come in and sit down, it's a meeting?
I did pass on your comments after you made them to me, Bill, about her concern for her personal safety. And I passed that on to someone in the state organizing chapter. Okay. I think... I know, and it's one of the reasons I'm a member, is because there are some boards, some commissions that look like it's stacked one way, that it's maybe not an equal representation, okay? And so they feel that in order to be heard, they need to go to bringing in their children and bringing in, creating that different environment. So that is one thing about it. And let's face it, in this state, here is a very powerful lobbying effort, the Farm Bureau. And so, you know, they're looking at the tactics and ways that they can help become an equal partner in that dialogue. I don't think they feel like an equal partner right now in the dialogue. And so that's starting on a local level also, isn't it? I mean, when it comes right down to it, because I suspect many of you belong to the Farm Bureau. We got a fair coming up, which I'm looking forward to, and all of those. And what I think looking at is, can that really be an equal partnership? Can that be equal discussion? So I think that it doesn't justify that Nancy would ever be afraid to walk to her.
It's not just Nancy. I use her as an example. Mm-hmm. Because we've been, you know, this EPC commission has been, and it's governor appointed. So when you say it's stacked, I don't agree with that. There's both sides put on that commission. Whether you agree or disagree with that, that's fine. But my whole point in here, through yelling and protesting, and you go to an open hearing meeting like that, that's just not the way we do things in Iowa. We can stop.
Yeah, I know, because, you know, we're getting a little... But I'd be happy to have coffee with you and some others to discuss that, about where different levels of empowerment come from. So, anyway, thank
well,
you.
Well, I wanted to give lots and lots of leeway, but
yeah.
I'm going to stop the leeway
yeah,
here, because we
good.
Do have business
that's
to conduct.
Yeah.
Those
thank
of you who are here for these items, please feel free to
thank
leave
you,
now and go about your
okay.
day. Thank you so much, everybody, being here. Bill, thank you.
Thank you.
No, thank you.
Thank
you did great work.
Thank you.
Good to see you. So, Mike Cox, I don't want you to feel terrible that you have now eliminated the room. But we're going to move on to the bid award, which those of you following along on your agenda, this is additional items number one. We're going to do this, and then we're going to come back to our agenda with agency reports.
You're the young man. Sometimes I don't think.
So last week we opened bids for phase one of the Tedesco Research Park. The bids were favorable compared to our estimates, or at least one of the bids was favorable compared to our estimates. I'm expecting that we're going to get a recommendation to take that one bid. We had three bids total. One bid was lower than our engineer's estimate. Two more were not lower than our engineer's estimate. Mike, take it away.
You just did my report. The only thing I'll add is that the Conservation Board last night did pass a recommendation to the Board of Supervisors here to move forward with approval of a bid with Peterson Contractor. They did come in at a substantial amount below our cost opinion, and so we feel that we're in a good position to move forward with this first phase of the Tedesco Environmental Learning Corridor.
Perfect. Questions for Mike.
Tell me about Peterson Contractors. You've had experience with them?
Conservation Board has not done any projects with them. My understanding is that they were the contractor that did Ada Hayden Park.
So they have
done significant work in the community. I think they've got some current projects in Ames. They have done work previously at the research park. So everything that we've heard, everything that we understand, is that it's a very good firm to work with.
Outstanding. Laura's questions?
None.
Take a motion.
Move to approve the bid for the Tedesco Environmental Learning Corridor, bid package one from Stream Restorations to Peterson Contracting for $810,379.50.
Aye. Second.
Motion and second. Further discussion?
None.
Chief?
Aye.
Olson?
None.
Sanders?
Sorry, that's an A. That's an I. I.
Sanders, aye. It passes. Mike, thank you very much. Next, we're to agency reports. We've got Friendship Arc Homes and Community Services. Friendship Arc Homes and Community Services annual report, Jennifer Ellis. Hi, Jennifer.
Hi.
And how are you?
Great. Thank you so much for having me today.
Absolutely.
I love the opportunity to talk about Friendship Arc. So my name is Jennifer Ellis. I'm the executive director. I joined the organization in November of 2014. The previous director had been there for 10 years, so quite a long time. So while I'm somewhat new to the organization, Friendship Arc actually was founded in 1999. So we've been a part of Ames and the Story County community for 18 years. Our mission is to provide or celebrate the uniqueness of adults with intellectual disabilities by providing homes and community services. We help them reach their fullest potential through faith, family, and friendship. We were founded actually by a set of parents, Joe and Lois Johans, who had an adult son. And back in 1999, there was really a shift from institutional settings to community-based settings, and they wanted to move their son back into the Ames community. So we started with two individuals living in a home, and from there, today we now have four homes. We serve five individuals in each one of our homes, and we're soon to have a fifth home. We're in the process of building that fifth home, and hopefully construction will be done towards the end of October, and we'll be able to add five more individuals. In 2015, we expanded the services that we were offering. Up to that point, we had only offered 24-hour support. In 2015, we had a young woman living in our homes, and she no longer needed 24-hour support, and we really wanted to encourage her independence. But because we didn't offer other services, she was going to have to leave our organization. and that just felt wrong. And so we decided to expand, and we started hourly supported community living or individual. And she and another young woman moved into their own apartments. And so that program has grown. We now serve 7 individuals, either in their own apartments or at home with their parents, transitioning, getting ready to move into a group home, and we're teaching them the skills that they would need to do that. Also in 2015, we had several individuals who were on a waiting list to try to get into a DHAB program. And DHAB is really an opportunity for folks who maybe can't work or can't find enough employment to keep themselves busy, to give them something productive to do. We know that when people are busy and engaged and productive, they have a better quality of life. And so that's what that DHAB program is designed to do. And there's been a real push from both the federal and state level to move people from facilities. So they used to go to a building and they would do activities there to get them more integrated into the community. And so we decided to start our program there. So we pick folks up at their homes and we ask them what they want to do for the day, what they're interested in or what they're curious about. And we take them into the community and do activities. And they can do that really individualized. Some want to go every day and all day long. And some just want to go for a few hours each day. So those are kind of some expansion areas where we've been able to grow over the last couple of years when I've been with the organization.
Okay. Thank you. Questions for Karen?
Jennifer, I am the board rep to the region and just got moved up to the vice chair. And I tell you, in the time that I've been on the board, you are seen as one, your operation is seen as one of the bright lights in the region.
Thank you.
And you're seen as a very effective administrator, so I compliment you because... And here in Story Canyon, we hear what people see us doing here, and you are one of the people they point to saying, that's pretty good, and we wish we had that. So,
oh, that's wonderful to hear.
Congrats.
Thank you.
Well, thank you so much for being here today.
Absolutely. Thank you for having me.
Sure. Next, we've got Veterans Affairs Quarterly Report, Brett McClain. Thanks, Matt.
Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Thank you, sir.
Okay, I'll go.
Thank you. Oh, I already had it.
Well, good morning.
Good morning.
I'm Brad.
Hi.
Here to for the fourth quarter report for Veterans Affairs. Period covering April 1st until June 30th. During that time, we assisted 4 veterans for county veterans benefits. 3 veterans came in for rent assistance, $1,600. 1 veteran came in for utility assistance, $47.56, for a total of $1,647.56. But also during the quarter, we've seen veterans and surviving spouses for state and federal benefits, and that number was 449, probably one of our largest. And I think later on in my report, you'll see what had happened to bring that number up. So I went back to our fourth quarter of last year, and it was 238. So quite an increase. Our interviews were 32 who served during World War II. And a lot of those, it's kind of sad to think that a lot of those were coming in and checking on their benefits for the first time. 33 served during Korea War, 120 during the Vietnam War, 22 who served during Persian Gulf War, 12 who served during the Cold War or peacetime, any time in between our wars, 17 who served during the Iraq and Afghanistan War, and then 70 surviving spouses of veterans. 49 of that group we actually enrolled in VA health care and or mental health care. And then 12, we reopened claims to increase their service connection where the issues have gotten worse. And so we just asked for an increase. 82 filed for original claims. These are brand new claims. Unfortunately, it's going to be 125 days before they get an answer. And some have been longer. Outreach, which is maybe the driving force for these numbers. May 9th, Aaron Rewarts and I, we set up a table at the Seniors Expo in Ames, the Quality Inn and Suites. We've seen 18 veterans there. And then May 12th, just a few days later, we sent out the newsletter to Story County veterans, and that was 3,200 copies. Went into homes. Not only veterans are reading those, their spouses are reading those. And then May 19th, we held our fourth annual Veterans Appreciation Day at the Moose Lodge. This event, by the way, when we first started, it wasn't called a Veterans Appreciation Day. Year one and two, it was a homeless stand-down day. And it was just a business decision that we just didn't have the numbers to have a homeless stand-down. So we've changed it. Number three was an outdoor event, which we got rained on. So number four, we went inside and we seen 91 veterans that day and some surviving spouses. June 1, 2017, we started issuing the Veterans or Vietnam War 50th commemoration book to veterans who served in the Vietnam War. Vietnam War was one of the most complex, misunderstood, and painful times in our nation's history. As painful as that war was, the greatest shame to come out of it was the way they were treated when they returned home. As of today, we have issued 71 of these books to Story County Vietnam veterans with a handshake and a heartfelt gratitude and welcome home.
So, and Brett, we're replacing those 71 books. Is that, so we had a conversation here about the possibility that we would start with a set number of books, you would distribute those, but as we distributed them, we would buy replacements for it. Is that
correct?
What we're doing?
Yeah. And we could do that, you know, a couple times a year if you want me to go another quarter.
I want you to do whatever your commission tells you. I just wanted to make sure that I was clear on where we were at.
Yep. I think we're going to go another quarter, and then I'll report that number to you, and then we can reimburse the fund so we can buy more books.
Okay.
Yep. And then June 20th, Aaron Rewerts and I did a Veterans Affairs presentation for the Golden K Club in Nevada. That was a fun one. For training, April 13th to the 13th, Aaron and I attended the VA training that was held by the Iowa Department of Veterans Affairs. And then June 11th to the 16th, I attended National Association of County Veterans Service Officers School to recertify as a County Veterans Service Officer under the Department of Veterans Affairs. The end of the quarter, June 27th, Mr. Lynn Lathrop, a Marine, Nevada Mayor, and a Vietnam veteran, was appointed by the Board of Supervisors for a three-year term. And one thing just to point out, it was in the Ames Tribune that he was an ex-Marine. And I don't think you'll find an ex-Marine. Once a Marine, always a Marine kind of a thing. So he's a Marine. That concludes my report.
So your question for Brett.
Congratulations on taking on Aaron. She has been one of those. Clearly the numbers just tell the story that there, you know, even all your efforts, and they were substantial, was not getting us to where we wanted to be. And bringing Aaron on and getting her trained this spring is showing that, and I suspect as you see some returning vets into the county, knowing that, you know, you've got your message out there even further, that we'll be able to keep tabs a little more closely on that veterans community in the county. So, and well, it was good to see, speaking of the interview in the Nevada paper, that they covered our recent appointment to your commission. I don't suspect that Mayor Lathrop is a acknowledged leader here in the community. I think you'll be happy with him once you see on your commission.
Yep. I think he's hit the floor running.
He was ready to go. So,
thank you very much. Questions for me?
Oh, none. Thank you.
Brett, thank you very much. Next is consideration of minutes from July 11th.
I would move as presented with the spelling error that I believe was corrected.
Perfect. Thank you.
Second.
Motion is second. Anything to note? Olson.
Aye.
Chitty.
Aye.
Sanders, aye. Minutes passed. Personnel actions as listed. Board.
I would move to approve as submitted.
There you go.
Second.
Motion is second. Olson.
Aye.
Chitty.
Aye.
Sanders, aye. Consent agenda board. Anything to pull?
I would like to pull out number seven, which is the recognizing Prairie River as a Iowa's official watershed authority as a resolution.
Perfect. Will you make a motion with that one item pulled?
Yes, I will. I move that we approve the consent agenda as presented with the exception of pulling item number 7 for discussion.
All right, second that.
Olson.
Aye.
Chief.
Aye.
Sanders. Aye. Item number 7 is a resolution recognizing Prairie Rivers of Iowa as the official watershed management organization for Story County, Iowa. Mike Cox, I'll ask you to come up. I know this was on the Conservation Board's agenda last night. Walk us through what this is and what it does.
Well, I think many of you are aware of the work that Prairie Rivers has been doing in the county and beyond the county as far as watershed education, watershed awareness, assessment, outreach, and been very active with that and very successful in the endeavors that they're doing. They have a very solid Squaw Creek Watershed Management Authority working on Kegley together with us and other entities. Very, very successful organization that we have worked with and continue to work with. This resolution recognizes those issues and recognizes the work that Prairie Rivers has done, recognizes that they are an integral part in watershed planning and watershed water quality awareness, etc. What this resolution does not do is vest any responsibility, vest any requirements or favor in Prairie Rivers of Iowa from the county. There are no obligations that go with this. There are no no special treatments, no legal transfer of any responsibility to
or implied for future relationships.
Or present or implied. The Conservation Board did consider a similar resolution last night, recognizing Prairie Rivers as the Conservation Board's watershed organization, and the Conservation Board did pass that resolution. So asking the supervisors today to consider that reciprocal resolution.
So if I read this more as a thank you and acknowledgement for work done, that would be appropriate?
Correct.
Okay. Questions?
My problem was with designating the official, okay, because in saying you are the official anything, that by practical use implies that there is some kind of special relationship, there's some kind of authority. Whether or not, based on a resolution, it says it is, it does imply that. And I'd like to look at using an alternate term to recognize them.
Do you have a suggestion?
Yes. Recognizes Prairie Rivers of Iowa as a significant contributor to Story County's watershed management efforts. That removes official from it and still recognizes them for all the good work that they do. Significant contributor to Story County's management, watershed management efforts. Sorry, that's a mouthful.
So we have two watershed authorities created in Story County. Who runs both of those for us right now?
So we have the Squaw Creek Watershed Management Association and the newly forming Kegley. And I don't know if the Kegley one has been filed with the state yet or not, but it's
passed both this board and city bank.
So it is effective. Squaw Creek, or I should say Prairie Rivers, and their staff is coordinating both of those WMAs. Does that answer your question?
But we don't designate an official vendor for paper. We don't, you know, and I know that's a not, like I said, non-consultant type thing, but we do go out and we go for bid for paper, we go for bid for services, a lot of different services, and we've not designated anyone as our official, okay? And I'm sure many of them provide good services from a range of, and all I'm asking here is we get rid of the word official. I mean, I have no problem recognizing them. I think they are doing a good job, and I hate for someone in the future to look at this saying, oh, they're the official watershed management organization, and then come into bid when we have a third watershed, if we set one up, or as we're working through the HUC-12s or whatever, and there being some kind of misunderstanding about what they have to do, or if they have to bring on Prairie Rivers as a subcontractor. I just, it's the word official, normally how it's used in practical every day, is it designates a special relationship, and I think what Prairie Rivers has done has made significant contributions to our efforts, and they will probably in the future, okay? But let's not shut out from people being able to come in and make bids, from being able to come in and offer proposals.
But this doesn't do that, and you just hit it on the head. You said this would recognize a special relationship between Story County, Story County Conservation, and Prairie Rivers, and that, in fact, exists.
That is a significant, they make significant contributions, but they may not always be the manager of all of the watersheds.
But it doesn't say that they will be. You just said the word official recognizes a special relationship, and I think that's exactly what we're trying to do here. Thoughts, Gordon?
I see is it. You had your meeting last night, you adopted this last night. Was any of this addressed in any capacity or shape by the Conservation Board?
You know, I think that the Conservation Board and their discussion of this really places a huge amount of trust and reliance on Prairie Rivers and their professionalism and their ability to bring things forward that, frankly, we can't. And so I think part of the strategic aspect of this relationship is just that, is to capitalize on and build a relationship for services that leverage the county resources and county abilities into expanded abilities for water quality. And that's what this does. That's what this partnership does. So in discussing the resolution last night with the Conservation Board, we had the same kind of discussions about does this relay or transfer any kind of special treatment? And again, that same answer is no, it doesn't. And the Conservation Board unanimously supported it.
Further discussion, or do I have a motion?
Boris, my thinking on this is a semantic distinction without a difference.
Hypothetical going forward, if we get approached by other vendors, because we do pay for that relationship, right? We compensate them monetarily for it.
I don't think that's accurate. And now we just entered into a contract where they're going to do some signage work for conservation, but that's the first dollars that have gone directly from the county to Prairie Rivers. We don't compensate them.
Correct.
Walk Creek, the management authority itself, did apply for dollars, and Prairie Rivers manages those dollars.
But not from the county.
Okay. So, I understand it's semantics, Marty. I do.
I'm trying to get a toehold, because the thing is, I clearly see sometimes you see things that I don't, but I just don't have, you haven't made the sale on my mind.
Okay. I'm probably more than the message is one, but then the precedent on that, I am concerned about the precedent of this. And if someone else would come forward and ask to also be designated the official of, because once we name them official of, they may use that however they want. Mm-hmm. Right? You know, they may go out and do other presentations out in the in other areas and say, we are the official watershed management organization for Story County.
I don't think may. I think they will do that.
Okay. So then does that become an endorsement for us, from us? And are we going to get in the practice of endorsing vendors?
Well, I don't know about the practice, but this is a different relationship, and I think it, I believe it clearly warrants, it is that special relationship that you described. They're providing something for the county and the County Conservation Board that we don't have the expertise to do.
Mm-hmm.
I believe, Loris, if you're saying that us calling them the official watershed management organization for Story County is helpful to them, absolutely it's helpful to them.
I see.
That's the benefit. But it's a benefit without us attaching any strings to it. It's helping an organization that has been phenomenal for Story County to work with, and that's an appropriately used superlative. And I hope that we won't get into the business of micromanaging what the Conservation Board comes out. Now, if we start parsing this out and we say, yeah, we approve it, but not quite what Conservation Board said, it waters the whole thing down, and I don't think we accomplish what we're hoping to accomplish with this. So I hope we can go ahead and make a motion to adopt this as written.
What would be the benefit for us? Can we restate what our benefit is in declaring a vendor and someone that we work with an official anything of the county?
For me, go ahead.
Well, and you can add to this, I'm sure, but again, to me, it gets back to the effectiveness of a partnership and leveraging our resources together with another organization's resources for the greater benefit of the county. And I think that's what we're doing here. And I think by doing this, we're augmenting or strengthening that relationship into the future. And so more things can be accomplished. In my mind, it's pretty straightforward that we're recognizing an organization for the work that they do, and what we expect in return is a continued very strong partnership with that organization, again, for the betterment of our water quality.
And I heard the word what we expect, and you're talking about leveraging, but they're not obligated to do that with us. It's like we're offering, hey, if we go ahead and make you the official, then you in return are going to give us work that's not being paid for?
No, there's no obligation
on them or from us.
Absolutely. I appreciate you wanting to clarify. This does not convey anything for the future other than to say they are our official watershed management organization, which it clearly and rightly implies that they're doing a great job for Story County. It is my hope that Prairie Rivers will be able to leverage this into further strengthening their organization, which is a huge benefit to Story County. They're located in Story County. They run both of our watersheds at this point, whatever happens in the future, and the work that they've done has been exemplary. And I think it's completely appropriate. I appreciate that the Conservation Board passed it unanimously. I think it's time for us to pass this thing.
I have comfort in knowing that this was discussed, this was voted on by the Conservation Board. I have always felt that they are more attuned to these issues and know the players involved. That's my comfort. Because the thing is, I think if they thought that there was some unease on a going forward basis, that they could not partner with somebody else because they gave an official designation, I would suspect that would have been discussed. And if it was not given a voice at their table, I understand what you're saying, and there's a faint resonance, but not to the level I sit there and say, let's have two different resolutions, one that they did and one that we did.
And the Conservation Board is passing it. You're right. They have their opportunity, and to do it. we come here and we have any more vendors. Now, I'm going to take a leap of faith here, okay? And that's what this is, a leap of faith, all right? That designating them as the official watershed management organization for Story County does not end up coming back with any kind of negative impact on Story County or feedback from other vendors, et cetera, okay? Because I've expressed my concerns here. I support Prairie Rivers.
Yes.
All right, so I'm going to take that leap of faith, and I'm gonna do this, okay?
Would you like to make that
yes,
motion?
Yes, I will make the motion. All right, I move that we approve resolution 1809. And...
Declaring
Prairie Rivers of Iowa as the official watershed management organization for Story County.
Second.
The motion and a second. Thank you, Doris. Motion and a second. Further discussion?
None.
Olson.
Aye.
Kitty.
Aye.
Sanders. Aye. Passes. Okay, that takes us to no public hearing items today, so we're to additional items. We've already handled number one, so next is consideration of resolution. Thanks, Mike. Resolution 1808. FY17 fund balance resolution.
Okay.
Good morning, Mrs. Markley.
Hi, I'm not even when I did because I didn't realize you'd already done the others. So they're good for not paying attention.
Closing out.
Good morning. I want to close out to FY17 with a few housekeeping items, I call them. On the board or on the agenda was the inventory report. That's one of the housekeeping items that I did to finalize the year. This was the fund balance resolution. There's this pesky little thing called Government Accounting Standards Board, and we comply with Government Accounting Standards Board. We need
actually headed up by former state auditor.
Former county auditor, Mary Mosman, current state auditor.
Well, the national gas organization is headed up by a former state auditor, which him taking that opened the door for our former auditor, Mary Mosman.
I agree. Mm-hmm. So anyway, what I'm doing here is of the ending cash balances, the way we ended the year, I am officially assigned. You are. I'm presenting to you to officially assign dollars and commit dollars. Committed dollars do not need to be reiterated on this. I just feel it's helpful to do that for you. Once you commit dollars, they are committed until they are uncommitted by the board. Okay? Assigning dollars assigns it for, during our budget process we're talking about, oh, let's assign some dollars to that. If it doesn't happen that way, it doesn't take a board action to undo the assignment. So I want to clarify that for you. So the general fund is the majority of the assigned dollars or all of the assigned dollars because that is actually the fund that we assign for.
Mm-hmm.
$200,000 for Justice Center renovations. $14,632 is asset carry forward. Note to you guys, I'm going to come back next week with a request for a budget amendment. I'm going to amend those dollars in so that they can spend them this year. $73,000 for CIP, $121,400 for small community funding. You assigned $889,230 for future capital projects, which was the sale of the CLP building. So that's sitting there and assigned for a total of $1,298,520 in the general fund. Now, because of the nature of the inmate commissary, the county attorney fine collection, and conservation acquisition and capital projects funds, those are all three considered general fund dollars because they are not statutorily required to be something else.
Mm-hmm.
So I include those, even though they're their own funds, as assigned in the general fund.
Right.
So those are the dollars, the ending fund balance in those three funds. I also listed all the restricted funds just for clarity and make sure that everybody's aware of what funds are restricted for what. They are restricted because you can't spend them on anything other than what those services are for in those funds. And at the bottom, I did show the committed. I did verify with conservation that the $1.6 million that you committed from the sale or from the DAPL dollars is not, has not been, none of that has been spent yet. Okay? So what will happen when they do spend it is I will come to you and ask for an uncommitment of those dollars that they are spending each time, and then I'll keep track of what the balance is, as will Jolene, I hope. And the secondary road fund, even though it's a restricted fund, we have committed 661,140, which was what was required from the motor grader lease back when we started that lease at the beginning of.
How long has that been?
I think we're in our fifth year, if I'm not mistaken. I'll have to go back and double check, but I think we're in our fifth year, so we should be getting close on that one.
Okay. Questions for Lisa Markman? If not, I'd take a motion to adopt Resolution 1808. No, this is housekeeping, and I move adoption of Resolution 1808. YA sensing fund balance as presented.
I second.
Motion to second. Further discussion? Chitty?
Aye.
Olson?
Aye.
Sanders? Aye.
As a point of question, though,
yep.
When we sat there and talked about the DAPL dollars, I know that as we were closing out 17, there might be an ask towards it for the Jordan Acres. Is that, did that
so,
happen?
So conservation came to us with an outline of where they expect to see these dollars go. First and foremost, as I understand it, conservation is wanting to have this 1.6 available, depending on how things go with the Tedesco Research Park. Now that we've seen our first bid come in and it actually came in under, I think you're going to see conservation get a little more interested in starting to draw down some of that 1.6. Where we left it as a board with conservation is we appreciated the concept that they brought forward, but anything that they're going to do with the 1.6, they're still going to have to come before this board and tell us. But they have given us kind of an outline of what they intend to do with this.
Yes, and you're right. Jordan Acres was scheduled for FY17 was my understanding, and that was one of the reasons that I made sure I double-checked with conservation to see if they spent any dollars.
From that. The sense I got is until we got this first bid of Tedesco, they were trying to make sure, because that's where a lot of it was. It gave them the wiggle room they felt like they needed.
Yeah, it was more of a question I should have thought to ask Mike, but I guess I didn't have it in my head because they were so close anyway, they thought they were on a leveraging basis or private ask that they were going to get there anyway.
So did we vote? Or are we still in discussion? So done. Thanks, Markley. Next is discussion consideration of booster pump proposals at the Justice Center. It's a budgeted item. Cal.
Good morning, Cal.
Good morning, Cal. You're correct. This was a budgeted item. At the time we did the budget, I had a single pump unit quoted and priced that out. After we got into the first of the year and started looking at the project, I realized that I need a duplex unit for redundancy out there. So that brought the cost up considerably. I have about $20,000 approximately in the budget, so I'm up around $37,830. I went out and got a second quote from Proctor Mechanical. They were the low bid. So I feel I can absorb the additional costs into my current budget, and we've been rode up by the state on low pressure in the jail. I feel this is very important that I move ahead with this project, and pending I don't have any unforeseen emergencies through the year, I think I'll be okay on that budget. If you approve that, I'll go back to Proctor and get a contract from them for you to sign on the consent agenda.
Perfect. Questions for Cal?
None.
Okay. Take a motion in that case.
I would move that we approve the quote from Proctor Mechanical Corporation for $37,830 to install a booster duplex system.
Second.
Motion to second. Further discussion? Cal, thank you very much. Olson?
Aye.
Chitty?
Aye.
Sanders? Aye. It passes. Now, discussion and consideration of estimate from Geotech Midwest for flushing of the geothermal here in the administration building that we all love.
I hope you've had a chance to look at some of the handouts I gave you of some of the issues that's been going on with this system. We have three geothermal systems. I have no problems with the others. For some reason, this one has been a constant battle. I've tried shocking the system with caustic soda. My old chemical contractor retired at the end of the year, and I'm with a new contractor now, we couldn't seem to solve the problem before, and we had talks then about flushing the system and starting over. And that's where we're at again, is we just can't seem to get rid of this biological in there that seems to grow, and you can see how it fills the filter, and then we get it in the screens. It's a lot of money, but I just don't know what to do other than to start over and get my pHs correct. Right now, I'm a little on the high side, and I'm worried there's going to be some non-ferrous metal destruction if we don't try and take care of this problem. I don't have money for this project in this budget that I'm going to be able to handle part of it, but I may need to amend on this issue.
Yep.
There's a window, too, on this. You know, I need to do this either in the fall or the spring when we've got mild temperatures. I can't do it just any time, or I could lose the building through this process.
Yeah.
So it's just, I think it's important.
But he means lose the temperature in the building. He doesn't mean the building's going to blow up.
Correct. Yeah. We could go high or low, and yeah, we don't want to go low in the wintertime, that's for sure.
Okay.
So that's...
You don't have any field leakage at all?
No leakage. No.
Congratulations. Because you got something growing in there. And have really all the way through, right?
We had an issue. A contractor hit the system during the construction and the install. And that seems to be...
Might have introduced something right there.
Something might have happened then. We've tried. They tried to correct it, and we've just never been able to get a handle on this. This is something, you know, that geothermal's kind of a new thing in this chemistry. But like I say, I'm on my second contractor, and he does a lot of this, and that's what he thinks we need to do is... purge the system out and then refill it with the right glycol percentages. And
what is that percentage?
I think it's about 60% food grade glycol we want in there.
Mm-hmm. All right, so this is something that if we approve it, we're going to have Lisa Markley come back to us with a budget amendment in order to get these dollars in.
Already on her list.
So, questions, comments, or a motion?
I would move, considering what we just heard, the estimate or the bid estimate from Geotech Midwest for flushing of our geothermal system here in the admin building for $23,250.
Second. I have. Okay.
Sounds like you had more to say.
I did. This may be one of the most interesting quotes we've received. I just want to note the fact that that it's actually got a markup listed as a separate item. And I just wanted to comment on that. If you look through it, it lists the repairs, it lists the labor, and we've got markup for $2,000. So I just found that interesting, honest, but interesting. So, and then the other one is a question for Lisa. We're just in the new budgeting fiscal year, so we go ahead and amend it, and the assumption would be it would come out of our unrestricted reserves, unassigned reserves, correct? Okay, thank you. I see a nod there. Yeah, for the audio. Okay. I'm done. Thank you.
Okay. Got anything to add?
No.
Okay. Sheedy?
Aye.
Olson?
Aye.
Sanders? Aye. Passes. Thank you. Gal?
Thank you very much.
Next is consideration of a letter of support for NSF PAWR program and AIMSnet project. It's listed above me. There's actually a group of us who met with them. This is a national bid that Iowa State University is one of. We don't know exactly how many. They made it through the first round of cuts, but it's a $20 million project looking at the next generation of wireless communications. I've just told you everything I know, right? We had a meeting the other day, and it was a several-hour meeting, and I was good for the introductions of everybody in the room, and then pretty rapidly got beyond that. But we had the gentleman who is in charge of this for Iowa State, in charge of putting together the proposal for Iowa State, come over and meet with several of our staff members. Through that discussion, there was a feeling among staff that Story County supporting the bid of Iowa State without committing to anything on the back end, simply saying this would be good and we would be really interested in working with them if in fact they get it, would be in the county's best interest and definitely in the area's best interest if we can get that $20 million that the federal government's going to award four $20 million grants. And it sounds like, and I don't think we know exactly who all's involved right now, but it sounds like we know a few that are involved. University of Wisconsin, Notre Dame, the North Carolina Research Triangle, University of Virginia, us. I'm sure there's several others. So I'm bringing before us the concept and in fact, specifics. This is a draft of a letter that was put together through many incarnations with many people touching. I think Leanne Harder had the last swipe at this. Leanne, is that right? Were you the last one to have a swipe at this? For us to consider passing and providing it to Iowa State University to include in their packet, which is due July 31st. Questions?
As somebody who lives down the county that has spy internet service, yeah, I'm with you there. This would be a godsend if we should be so fortunate to have this come to fruition. And it's, I see no exposure on a dollars basis. This is just looking for a letter of support for an organization going forward to possibly bring this technology to the unincorporated or wherever. I would have no qualms in supporting this.
Okay, I'll take that as a motion.
I'll second it.
Okay, now go.
Okay, I did some surfing last night to figure out what all of these terms meant when you put it all together, so of the living lab, et cetera. And my only question or concern is down to the last bullet point under Story County is committed to, and it references after the five-year grant period. I don't know that we can really obligate future boards, but at the same time, I heard you say, Rick, that we're really not committing to anything.
Right.
Okay.
So that last bullet, so I'm going to read the bullet so that everybody's working on the same information. The last bullet is working with the AIMSNet team. AIMSNet is what this proposal is.
Mm-hmm.
Working with the AIMSNet team to develop strategies that will sustain and grow the AIMSNet Living Lab after the five-year NSF funding period. What that means is, so you've got the $20 million that would come in and do infrastructure and programs and everything else, trying to put together strategies that if that $20 million is invested in the area, that we're going to be at the table talking about strategies for not just mothballing it at the end of the 5 years.
Got it. Yep. So it's a commitment that we can make because we're talking about developing strategies prior to the end of the grant. It's just that so the grant at the end of the 5 years isn't basically wasted, right?
Correct. And it simply, I believe, all this does is suggest, and I think rightly suggest, that Story County would have real interest in being a participant in any of those conversations about what you would do after the 5 years.
Right. Okay. All right. Thank you.
Yep. So we've got a motion and a second. Further discussion?
No.
Chitty?
Aye.
Olson?
Aye.
Sanders? Aye. It is signed. Liam, will you assist me in making sure this gets where it needs to go? Thank you. All right. Next, and then we're going to take a break, is discussion consideration of repair or replacement of HVAC units at the animal control shelter for $14,172 with a $2,400 rebate for a total cost of $11,772, which is unbudgeted. Ah, the joys of ownership of that building. When we were a leaseholder, we just said to the landlord, oh, by the way. So, first thing I would say is, as I understand it, facilities did a phenomenal job getting some portable units over there. In the meantime, animals have been just fine.
They've been fine. And yeah, no, and I want to thank facilities for that. They got them over there in a timely fashion, and we've been able to maintain, so that's a good thing.
We got a good deal on a 20-year-old building. The reality is when you buy a 20-year-old building, you're going to have some infrastructure things that you have to deal with. HVAC is clearly one of those. You feel good about the quotes you've got and who you work with. Now, you have a relationship with C&K, Animal Control I'm talking about, right?
Yes. We do have a relationship with C&K every year. They have their shelter shindig in May, and it's put on for our shelter and the AIM shelter, but they're very good to us. They put a lot forth to get it to go and be successful, and it benefits the shelter greatly. And so, you know, when I was thinking we were going to do this, I thought maybe we should start there. I know this is an unbudgeted item, but I do have in my building and maintenance account $19,000. I feel like we wouldn't have to really, we could just take it out of there.
So unbudgeted, but you would just count this as a $19,000 line item that
yeah.
you got. Okay.
Yeah, it's going to hurt my heart, but we'll do that. And then, and one of the things where we had two kind of issues going, the first furnace, which was we call the west furnace. They're actually the two furnaces that sit most side by side, but to distinguish them, the far west furnace and then the one to the east of it, they sit side by side. They're where most of the animals are. In fact, that is what services them. And they, one went out. Al fixed it a few times when he was there. We had somebody there to fix it a couple weeks ago, and the guy said, look, your condenser on your air conditioning is, you know, it's just, I mean, we can keep babying this along, but what it comes down to is about dead. Well, that made me sad, and then 2 days later, our other one decided it was also going to do something bad. So we started to have water come out of the furnace, and then we opened it up, and all of our metal plates in there have accumulated rust, and when he tried to clean them, they were so rusty, they just fell apart. So, you know, I'm told in the mechanical world that when you do the air conditioner now, you should also do the furnace, because that's how they go hand in hand. And the condenser alone was $3,500. So when you look at the price of each furnace, which we're easy figuring, we figure like, you know, close to $6,000, you've got $2,500 left that, you know, at some point you're going to either have to also now buy a new air conditioner and buy a new furnace. So I felt this was the best deal, and they came over, they measured our space, they made sure that we had, you know, ample for what we were getting, and I'm recommending that we go with this.
Super Deb,
anything to add? Yeah, the only thing I would add is this was not included as part of the look at remodeling and making those improvements in the animal shelter. So this is in addition to what we're looking at doing there. And I do appreciate C&K coming out so quickly and expediting their service, and given what the heat is like outside and the shelter serving the animals. So I appreciate their willingness to address this quickly.
Absolutely. Question.
With approval of this, how fast can they do this?
Well, I could have. I went ahead and just took the liberty. I thought we better get on their schedule as soon as we could. So last Thursday, I got us on the schedule. We are 2 weeks from today, but if they have a cancellation, we will be the first to bump up.
Okay.
When we were over there, they were like running around. I mean, this is their time. Of course,
oh, yeah.
Air conditioners breaking and new units, and so. As long as facilities has been gracious enough to let us use their portable air conditioners, we can get by the next 2 weeks.
Okay. Other questions for us?
I saw a note, I think written on a copy of the agenda that was on the hard copies of our packet, and it said the tape up in the corner something about a different quote. So the $11,772 is the accurate quote,
yes.
Correct? Not
yes.
What was originally sent out to us,
right.
Correct?
Right.
That's all I wanted to say.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. $14,000 was the original, and then we got a great rebate. That's the other thing. They don't always offer that high of a rebate for $2,400, and so that brought us down to the $11,772.
Right. Yes, you got the Alliance got to help your chest pain a little bit.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
In fact, you got technology that clearly is better than other places.
Yeah.
Okay. So we have a motion. You have a motion to move consideration of the replacements of the high vac units at the animal control shelter for a net cost of $11,772.
Second.
Further discussion. Chief.
Aye.
Olson.
Aye.
Sanders. Aye. Thanks, Sue. So now we're going to take a 3-minute break, and then we're going to come back and we're going to go to presentations for urban renewal area program applicants. We're going to start with Cambridge, but I know that Mayor DeYoung's got to be in Iowa City. All right, so we are now back in session. Leanne, will you come up and get us started on these presentations? And we will start with Cambridge. I don't know what order you got it in, but we'll start with Cambridge, knowing that Mayor Young has another appointment.
Morning, Leanne.
Good morning. Good morning. Good morning. I have a presentation I'll do as a wrap-up.
Okay.
Of all three, or all four. I think if we just go alphabetical order, that allows me to get everyone's presentations up and going after.
Perfect.
Do you want more than that?
That's a great kickoff. All right, Mayor DeYoung.
Morning, Mayor.
Hi.
From beautiful Cambridge, Iowa.
Scott DeYoung, Mayor of Cambridge. I don't have a presentation other than the handout I gave you. I'm not smart enough to do that. So. Although you did notice at the top, the number one urban renewal request. That's not because I'm first, because it's the top priority. So that's subliminal.
Thanks. Subliminal, okay, good.
Thanks for clarity.
Not so.
It's all about semantics.
Yeah.
So basically our project is we've got some old light poles on Water Street. And with our budget restrictions due to the new community building, our funds are a little tight. And this is a project that should be done right now in conjunction with the work being done with the community building. It's just our funds are not there to do it. So basically I'm asking for the total project cost is estimated at $38,200. I'm asking for 75% of that project cost at $28,650. What this project does, there are 10 old light poles from the 50s. They're leaning, they're dented up, they've been run into. We'll remove those 10 light poles, install 6 new light poles with LED heads for energy efficiency and increased lighting capability. And they will remove overhead power lines at the same time as part of our continual Main Street beautification project. We don't really have a written plan, but it's
right.
Just for the past 16 years, that's been even before I became mayor, has been a concentration of the council. So.
And the city has capacity to handle the 25% if the county were to handle the 75%?
Yes, if we don't get this grant, we will probably push this back. And it'll cost us more money because left cut concrete
right.
Put in place for the community project.
So we want to do it while the work's going on down there.
It'll be
you want to bury power lines, which is different. So instead of having the overhead lines.
Yes.
Okay. Questions for Scott? And today, I guess I should have clarified, today is our opportunity to receive their information, to ask questions we have. This is not the decision point. Our decision point will come later. But now is an appropriate time. If you have questions or additional information that you want to know, now is the appropriate time to ask.
And Scott, just to help me clarify, as I read through all the long descriptives that we got originally, that this is because all of your funds really are committing into the building project,
yes.
Right?
Yes, it's initially it's a pretty taxing on a budget,
mm-hmm.
But once we get the construction done and get on our annual budget for payment for that community building, which is we're paying with TIF dollars for the project. We estimate we're scheduled for an 8-year payback on that. So,
and you will see a return on the LEDs. So.
Yeah, absolutely. And as a side note, we've already had multiple calls for renting of the community center.
How is that coming?
November 1st is the official substantial completion date. We're looking at probably October 1st, so their heating season is going to finish up about a month ahead. So.
Congratulations.
Can we head it out there tomorrow for a check presentation?
Yes.
Looks good down there. Other questions for Scott?
No.
Okay. No decision point here. Yeah, Art and Griner has a question. Come on up, Art.
Would Goliath or someone else own the poles?
No, the way that works is that is a potential.
The question is, who would own the poles?
We will own the poles, but and there is the option for Alliant. We own them now. There's an option for Alliant to own the poles, and then you rent them from them. So we would pay a rent payment each month for each pole.
Forever.
So it's more cost effective, either even though it's heavier up front, for us to buy the poles. And a pole cost is right around, for the pole and the light head, is at $1,500 a piece. So, and I couldn't tell you what the rent amount is. But we just did this on another street. We bought three poles, and just because of the rent over time would far exceed the purchase cost.
No. Other questions?
No, it's clearly.
Good. Take care of it, Art. Thank you. All right, Scott, thank you very much. Drive safely. Next I've got is Gilbert.
Good morning.
Hi there.
Good morning.
How are you?
Good. How are you guys?
I just want to note that this is Gilbert's first application in this program.
For this program.
Absolutely.
So we are looking at, in 2018, refurbishing our Main Street. It has, so our project is to go from Main Street, from Matthews Drive, which you see there at the bottom.
Can you tell us who you are, please?
Oh, I'm sorry. I'm Sonia Ariana Dodd. I'm with the City of Gilbert. So our project will go from Matthews Drive to just north of 2nd Street, which will go past our co-op, the Key Co-op building there. One of the, as you can see, this is the 100 block of Main Street, and the lane that goes north, which goes to the Key Co-op, takes a lot of weight, and it's pretty broken up. Gary's basically keeping it together with determination and tar. So this is an intersection which, with the project, will kind of clean up a little bit. It's a little hard to distinguish where to turn, especially on the Key Co-op side, the west screen there. Where that arrow is, that's kind of where the project will stop. So there is another small portion of Main Street that we're not going to pave. There's no business, no active business on that section. And then there's a house, two houses at the end. So it doesn't get much traffic. It's the rest of the part that we're looking at doing. So we're going to do complete removal, take it all the way down. Part of that process is putting in storm sewer. We have some now. It's mostly a tile. But it's going to need major storm sewer project, and that's where our holdup is right now, is finding the best way to remove that storm water. It's possible that in that project we'll put in a new water main in the front. Right now we have a water main that goes down Hall Street, which is behind businesses, but this would put it up in front and make it just a little easier to tie into. The parking area, which would get updated, and our sidewalk design. So right now, if you've been on Main Street, there's a good step up from the street to the sidewalk. We have a ramp for ADA, but it doesn't make it easy to get to all the businesses. You have to go down and around. So that would make that a little more accessible. The entire project cost is going to be over $1 million. So we are asking for just a portion. That's the schematic there from the box that shows the area that will get replaced. As you can see, part of First Street there at that intersection will also get taken care of at the co-op for Second Street, because of the traffic as well where they're turning around. So we're asking for 58.
It's $3,000 out of the $1.7 million.
Out of the $1.7 million.
Okay.
Realizing that this grant likes to support economic development, this is the portion that we're asking for to kind of help with the signage for the businesses that are downtown to help with information going out to keep those businesses operational and running while this project is going, because this is going to be, you know, almost a full year of work that will be done. And then after the work is done, to make that area presentable. So our seating and our putting back up signage and stuff for our businesses. So.
Perfect. Question for Sonia.
None. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you.
Great. Thank you, guys.
Next is Slater.
Jennifer.
So this feels like an odd kind of a next step by step. The last few years we've been moving through this process.
Yes, you are correct. Jennifer Davies, I'm the city administrator for City of Slater. The city of Slater is requesting $94,500 of a total project of $126,000. This map shows you, as you said, this has been a continuous project. This will be our, this will be our fourth request. And potentially our last, which would complete all of the revitalization and streetscaping of our two-block Main Street in Slater. The cost is a little bit more than it has been in the last 2 years for requests, because we are hoping we can complete both the north and south side of the 400 block of Main Street instead of just one. We've gotten awesome response from our community members with what is complete. It was completed last fall, and I'm very excited about the other section that will be completed here. They're beginning work next week, actually. So. If you've been to Main Street and seen what has been completed over the last couple of years, we have some new street lighting that goes with it, banners that represent our new logo that we're trying to trademark our community with. Here's the first year completed project, was in front of City Hall. And these are a couple pictures of what was completed last fall. New lighting. And then once all the street lighting is done on both of the blocks of Main Street, our overhead power lines will also be disappearing, that you see here in this picture. So the block was completed last fall. Any questions or?
Questions for Jennifer?
No.
One of the easier ones is just the staging you guys are doing, right? And congratulations on the fact it does aesthetically look pretty impressive.
It does look fabulous. And this year, in fact, after 4th of July, we got even more because it wasn't completed last year. This block was completed after 4th of July last year. And almost 10,000 people that came to town. We had several people post on our Facebook and stuff and make comments about how nice it's coming along. So,
but this is kind of a doubling up of what we requested, what you guys have requested in the past.
It is, yes.
So, any other questions for Jennifer?
No.
Jennifer,
no.
Thank you very much. Next is Story City. And it is good afternoon now.
Hi. You're
the first one who gets that. And you're Abby.
I'm Abby.
Abby, thank you for being here.
Yeah, thank you. I'm Abby Huff with the Story City Greater Chamber Connection. I know for this, Mark and Mike have both been down here, so they sent me with my smiling face this morning or afternoon.
Tell Mark it's a good choice.
Yeah, I will. I'll let him know. So we are looking at doing a, we're calling it the Story City Downtown Beautification Project. So just to give you an idea of where this project is, it is located on Broad Street between Elm and Park. And some of the items that I'm going to go through will be put on Penn Avenue, but still located in that downtown area. Downtown is Story City's main business district. It's got retail, restaurants, service. It's also where City Hall is located, the library, and the historic Story Theater. We are a Main Street community as well as a TIF district in the downtown. So the first proposed improvement, we've been working with Main Street Iowa because we are a Main Street community for about 3 years, trying to get some signage to let people know that they have arrived in downtown. And this is our third attempt and final. This is what we have come up with to just let people know they're in downtown. We also wanted to brand ourselves. So each sign will say Downtown Story City, but have something that represents Story City. So we've got one that's Rose Mall, one that has the swinging bridge, one that has a carousel horse, and then the Norseman head. We are in need of some new benches. The existing bench you can see is on the left, and the new benches are on the right. The existing benches are in pretty good shape. We will just relocate them to Penn Street, so around the corner. The only thing that we want more seating. We want to create downtown as an environment so people can come, they can sit, they can hang out. So that's really why we need some more benching. We need new trash receptacles. This is not even the worst one, the picture on the left. They are completely rusted out. We just need to get rid of these and start new. The proposed new receptacles on the right, they stand out a little more. They're a little more attractive. Again, with that beautification look. We want to add bike racks. We don't have any bike racks right now in downtown, and we have an art studio, we have the library, again, theater, where people ride their bikes downtown, and they just kind of get parked on the sidewalk or chained to the foam poles or the light poles. So we really want to give bikes a place to park because people are riding their bikes downtown. And then, we want to bring some history to our downtown. And these are actually in Iowa Falls, but we really liked what they did. They gave historic photographs, historic information, and we want to work on something that's similar to this. Not exactly this, but this was just a concept idea that we really liked. And then we want to add lighting. We used to have lighting about 10 years ago on our buildings, and we want to bring that back and really just give it a dynamic look. You can see downtown Ames right now has this lighting. It's the same product that they use. We want to get it from Innovative and then have Nelson Electric in Ames install it for us. And we've gotten bids from them. So why the economic impact and why we want to do this? So one of the Main Street four-point approaches is design. So looking at design, they did some research and they said, besides parks, downtowns are the only other place in cities where citizens feel like they have ownership. It creates a sense of place, and this project will address pedestrian needs by providing places to sit, hanging out with friends, parking bikes away from the flow of traffic, and keeping trash off the street. It also gives Downtown Story City an identity with branding and lighting. So our primary purpose is to entice visitors and community members to travel off of Highway 69 and I-35. We want to create a more welcoming and friendly environment for our community. And then we did a first impressions with Main Street a couple years ago, and one of the biggest things was addressing the design of our Main Street and adding more friendly spaces and an identity. So here's kind of the cost breakdown. The boulevard signs for four of them are going to cost roughly $5,500. The benches, we need 12 of those. almost 10,000. Trash receptacles, 16 of those, because we need all new ones, 15,000. The bike racks are 1,100. Just history plaques are 4,000, and then the lights are 65,000. So that brings the total project to $100,000, and we are asking for the 75%, which will be $75,000. And then we've gotten, so the city has committed to nine. The municipal electric has considered, has committed to 9,000, and we have fundraised for 7,000. So that's the 25%.
Questions?
No, very good presentation.
Yeah, good job. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
So, Arden, I'm going to ask you, do you want to go now or do you want to wait till the very end? Now is appropriate if you want to go now.
Come on. Yep, wait till you get up here so that we've got it all recorded for
posterity.
Future posterity.
This is just updated from last year. The figures, most of the majority of the figures are different.
Super, thank you.
For the TIF district stuff.
Thank you.
We have four copies. Arden Greiner from Sherman Township. Story City, the vast majority, 65,000, is Yule Tide lighting. Is that on private businesses?
It is. But we are. We'll
own
it.
Okay.
We'll maintain that. We'll have a warranty.
Okay. TIF districts, my mom always said the squeaky wheel gets greased. The same people keep coming back for money. Third one down, Ames ISU Research Park, urban renewal. On the front. See, they're already withholding $379,000, I think, a year, if I read this right, from property tax receipts. And yet we just awarded the Tedesco, you know, the research park, right, or the conservation commission right behind it, $800,000 this year. That's, or tonight, today we did that.
Pardon me, you said they are already withholding?
Yeah.
I mean, we are withholding for them? Or
They've created TIF districts.
Okay, right. That's fast.
And that money doesn't come into the county. They
right.
keep it.
Okay, thank you.
I mean, if you go on down here for our applications tonight, and Marty, you're right. Nevada's by far the...
When you started this conversation with me, I was just like, okay, tell you about it. Sit on the school board here for a decade.
Yeah.
Tells me that we're in a... Yeah.
You wish they never would have started TIF?
Well, the thing is, it's one of those imperfect tools. You know, it's almost like a 12-inch crescent wrench. You can use it to take off a small nut, or you can beat something with it. And I think too often you see people beating things with it. And I think that's your discomfort.
Well, what I don't like about this process is I wish it was fair and evenly distributed across the entire county to all the towns instead of just the ones that continually keep coming back and asking for more. Story City. Well, you can see on here.
Yeah.
For the ones, Cambridge is withholding $300,000. Requesting today. Slater's withholding $77,000. Story City's already withholding $809,000 a year. Some of these projects today are continuations from ones from last year.
Mm-hmm.
Is anybody auditing where the money went last year? Were the projects, did the money go to the projects that it was supposed to go to last year? Does anybody in the county audit this money and follow it?
So Mark Lee is not in here right now, but as I understand it, we are simply reimbursing once the work is done. So
I can speak to that if you'd like.
Yeah.
We actually have to submit invoices that have been paid to be able to get reimbursed from the county for these projects.
It's not a block grant, Arden, where we're giving the money and saying,
it doesn't
go
come
do the work.
It has to be spent first, and the invoices have to be.
So that's a yes
original.
Part of the question.
Yes.
Okay.
If that's your definition of being audited, yes. Yeah,
well, there's someone tracking this
in
the county.
Sure.
Okay. I guess we got a yes there.
Now, what we don't have here, and I'm going to ask Sonia this, so Gilbert at this point has no TIF districts, but are you guys in the process of talking about creating a TIF district or not?
No.
Okay. And I'll say this also, Arden. Yeah. So Gilbert is the last of our towns to apply to participate in this. So clearly you're talking about how we have the same ones that come through again and again and again.
Yeah.
The reality is every community in Story County, with the exception of Ames. Ames has not been part of this project, but they have the research part clearly. Gilbert is the last one of our communities who has not, this is the first time they've applied for anything. Everybody else has participated.
First of all, here is Ames Campbelltown Urban Renewal.
Yeah, but I'm talking about dollars that Story County has put in this program we're talking about today.
Yeah.
Everybody now has applied, with the exception of Ames, as part of this program that we're talking about today.
Okay.
Yep.
Okay. Should the dollar figures requested be included in the application? I mean, there's a couple of these that didn't have the figure known that was going to be applied for wasn't known.
So Gilbert was the only one that I wasn't sure of. Everybody else, I think, had their request built in. And Gilbert's, I think, was just a function of this is the first time that they've applied.
Not as based on the application.
Right.
Okay.
We've talked
about it. Then, like in Cambridge, we're continuing projects that were done approved last year. They spent almost $3 million for their building, and they borrowed $1.4 million of it. So, the county's taking future tax dollars that we haven't received yet, and we're loaning them to, and we're giving a grant to Cambridge, and yet Cambridge is taking out a $1.4 million loan to build this new building.
Right, but Cambridge is paying back that $1.4 million loan. The county's not.
Right.
So the county, and Leanne, help me if I miss the numbers here, but it's somewhere in that $80,000 range that the county contributed to this community center. Last year. I don't know where you're getting that it's the continuation of a project because now we're talking about streetlights. I mean, it's in conjunction, it's in close proximity to this project, but this is further down on Main Street. Slater is a good example of kind of a continuation of a project, exactly. But they've taken it one piece at a time trying to get this done rather than doing the whole project. In fact, Jennifer, correct me if I'm wrong, I think the first time we talked about this where you did something right out in front of City Hall, we talked about the entire project and decided, or the concept of the entire project, and decided it was more palatable kind of piece by piece for both the city and the county. Is that right?
Correct.
Okay.
Okay. But if I look at Main Street as airing, you know, the community building was built by private donations from a rich couple. And the benches on Main Street have all got a plaque on the back of who donated them.
Sure.
You know, in memory. And I just kind of hate the fact that we have to take taxpayer dollars to buy trash receptacles and benches for people's Main Streets. I just don't think that's appropriate. And I don't think it's appropriate to put this money to put it on lights on private buildings.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you.
Appreciate your comments.
Thanks for doing the collation on this.
This is cool. Leanne, you're going to close us out of this part of our agenda. And good to see you, Art. It's been a while.
Didn't we have one meeting that went too long where he couldn't stay to present?
Yeah. Okay, where's mine? I thought everyone else was up. Here we go. This is really, as you just said, closing out the presentations and then entering into the consultation meeting, too, if that's okay. What I have is just an overview of a recapping of the projects that you've just heard, the four proposals we received, but then for the board's benefit, as well as those in attendance, what the intent of the program is for Story County as currently adopted. The TIF goals, objectives, and strategies as outlined in our policies identify four projects that are eligible that could apply for funding through this program: transportation infrastructure enhancement, public land and trail improvement, communication and utility infrastructure expansion, and Main Street and Town Center revitalization. And all four projects do meet one of those four types of eligible programs. Also, the
the policies clearly state no tax increment rebate, grants, loans, or assistance to private business. In recognition, it goes on to state, in recognition of government's limited appropriate role in the private business cycle, Story County will not use TIF funds to participate in any direct disbursement or rebate to a private entity. And again, the guidelines do identify a match of 25% recommended of the total project cost. I'm not going to go through that one. I'm going to just go to this one. The last slide is just how we would possibly amend the plan. We'll actually be having that discussion next week. What we simply do each year, the applicants come in, we add them to the list of awarded projects. But this is a summary of what we've awarded since 2013. What I do want to mention, there are several other projects that aren't on this list because they came in outside of this program. So Dinkins Lake, the trail along Indian
South of
Nevada. The paving along Better Equipment.
Right, that's 590th, and now the Research Park.
Research Park, and then actually the Prairie Rail Trail expansion. And it's part of the plan, too. But since 2013, in total, we have so far awarded a little bit over $1 million, $1,012,747. With the $273,350 that are requested before with the grant proposals right now, if those were awarded in total, it would be $1,287 million. I get above $500, I can stumble over numbers. actually $50 lately. kind of a picture of where we've been and how the amounts requested fit into that picture.
And just to underscore, we borrowed none of that. That's all been paid out of existing revenues.
Yep. Actually, I was just going to say that next point.
Okay.
Rick said, this is the first time Gilbert's come in. We have received applications now from every community. COLO did apply in 2013 or 14, but was not funded. But they would be the remaining community that has not been funded to participate in the program.
Yeah, and so that's not, so Sheldahl, which kind of spilled over into three different counties, it's not including them, and clearly no City of Ames up there.
And Sheldahl, controlling county is actually Polk County, I believe. So I think that there's some limitations in that regard. So the schedule that the board did approve in late June, we started back in early June. June 6th was the deadline for actually applicants to be submitted, and all the four that you have before you this morning did meet that deadline. We received four, and all four went forward. We've sent out consultation meeting notices for today, and the next item on the agenda is a consultation meeting. From that point on, those affected tax entities have 7 days to recommend in writing any modifications. They are directed to the chairman of the Board of Supervisors. Then next week, the written recommendations are due, but the auditor will present where we are and the financing aspect of it. And then discussion and direction from the board to staff on how we're going to go forward, what projects you may or may not want to include.
And at what levels.
And at what levels, exactly. And that's why it's important to have that discussion hand-in-hand when the auditor's presenting the amounts available. And then the resolution, setting a public hearing for the date of the resolution, actually amending the plan, will be on the 1st of August. Get notice, send out the legal notices, etc. And then the board has a time period that they can respond in writing, or they must respond in writing to those written comments we receive next week. That would be the 15th of August. And then the public hearing will be actually August 22nd. Again, this has moved up from the past years, and it may get a little bit confusing over the next couple months because we also are doing tax increment financing with loan agreements for the research park, the Tedesco Environmental Learning Corridor. So it can get kind of confusing, I will admit that. So I'll do my best to make sure to note for the board and those in attendance which is happening. I did distribute, or I did it, Deb did for me, the summary sheets that were on the board's agenda, as well as the existing urban rural area plan, and that is with the amendments that were considered last week by the board, specific for the Tedesco Environmental Learning Corridor. With that, my contact information is up there. I encourage anyone that has any questions to let me know. You can also go to Story County's website to see the current materials, storycountyiowa.gov, and then there's a four business tab, and then economic development, and then urban renewal area projects. And I try my best to keep that up and the most up-to-date plan, and it is right now.
Perfect. Thank you. Questions for Leanne?
Nothing.
There was one slide in here I'd like to get a copy of, if it's not on the website, that I can pull off myself. It was one where it actually showed my community, like I've been granted so far. That was a great slide.
Yep.
And I actually just updated it this morning. Okay, so I can pull it off the website? No.
Oh.
No, I can get it to you.
Okay.
I'll put the presentation actually on the website too.
Okay. Great.
Super. All right. So what we're going to do right now is we're going to go ahead right into the consultation meeting and get this handled. I know we've got Arden representing a township trustees. And if there's anybody else who would like to comment or has questions as part of the consultation meeting, we'll do that now. Arden, you're up.
Yeah. Arden Grinder Sherman. When you're funding 75%, is that really... If you fund 75% of something, there's nothing that won't go. I mean, people will apply for the move.
Right.
I think maybe we should have a lot lower percentage of matching funds because...
What would you propose?
Well, like 25. I mean, how much interest do the people have?
Sure. I think it's a really fair question. And, Leanne, I don't know if you have these numbers off the top of your head, but I think it's worth us having access to the numbers of what kind of percentage we've funded on projects in the past. There's only been one or two times that I recall us getting up near the 75% threshold, and that has just been a maximum, Martin. It hasn't been an automatic. Now, this is this board's first chance to go at this, right? So previous boards, is it fair for me to say, Leanne, that we almost never got up to 75%?
I think there were a couple of jurisdictions that we, Story City comes to mind that we have.
That we got Story City, Collins was 75%.
Yeah,
Huxley was 75%. Slayer was 75%.
So
in the
trend,
past.
Trend shifted last year where that 75% mark came closer.
Okay.
As opposed to the
previous years where it was a lower amount.
If I can get that information together and get it on the website as well.
I think that's worth having out
but
there.
But this year's applications.
Well, they apply. Just because they apply for it doesn't mean they're going to get it or they're going to get the level that they request.
Slayer's wanting 75. Story City's wanting 75.
Cambridge's wanting 75, and Gilbert's not wanting anywhere close to 75.
Yeah.
They've requested it. And it'll be interesting to hear this full conversation. I would encourage, I know in previous years, Arden, you put your thoughts in writing and gotten it to us, too, just to include as part of this. I'd encourage you to do that again this year.
Do those responses have to go out to all the taxing entities or just back to me?
Leanne, what happens? Yeah, okay. So when you ask a question, we send it to everybody.
Okay.
Okay. Is there anybody else as part of the consultation meeting that would like to visit with the Board of Supervisors? Okay, seeing no one, we'll close the consultation meeting, and thank you to everybody. And now we're going back up to departmental reports. We've got Community Services Quarterly Report, Carl Webb.
Afternoon, Carla.
Hi, Carla.
Hello.
Thanks for bearing with us, Carla.
Matt, thank you for having me today. My report is to cover the period of April 2017 to June 2017. I'll walk through it here with you. General assistance, we assisted 20 single households and assisted 17 family households for a total of 37 this quarter. Year-to-date total, we assisted 154 individuals and families. Denials, where we're unable to assist and we refer individuals on to other options, we had 202 of those this quarter for a total of 887 for the year. We had 20 people that applied but did not come back for a total of 87 for this fiscal year. For rent, we assisted with $13,001.03. Utilities was $1,639.66. and miscellaneous, which includes any medications, transportation, or burial assistance. We assisted with $7,650. We did close out the first round of the relocation assistance for Crestview Mobile Home Park. We didn't have anybody that we assisted with during the quarter. The year-to-date total there, we assisted 5 single individuals and 3 families for a total of 8 households for $4,378.69.
And then in this next round, we have 10 applicants at this point?
Yes, we do. Yep. SSI interim, we've continued to assist 1 individual, and we did receive revenue of $450 for a case. I believe it was we had assisted the individual just once with their rent in the SSI interim program, and then they were just recently approved. So we did get that reimbursement back. For substance abuse services, we paid on 2 individuals for a total of 18 payments this year in relation to substance abuse service. For the region, we were underway with contracting for FY18. We've wrapped up about 50 contracts that were developed region-wide. That, I play a significant role with the contracting. I head all of that up, and I have staff in our office that assist with that. So I'm glad to be through the majority of it. So. We did have 3 staff that went through adult mental health first aid facilitator training. One of those individuals is Kathy Johnson in our office. They all received their certification, and so they are now able to facilitate those trainings. And we are working to get a training set up in each county within the region, and we'll be having one here in Story County on November 1st. For those trainings, the capacity is 30. Individuals, and usually it's 2 facilitators at a time. The Employment Committee wrapped up the CICS supplement to the county employee manuals for CICS funded positions, and the Governing Board did approve that in May, and I brought that to you guys, I think, within the last month as well, as FYI. We have started to work on pulling the regional stakeholder work group together. That's required in Senate File 504. And the Governing Board did approve for us to have a facilitator, Beth Morris, out of Mission Matters, to help work with the group as they go through this process. Beth will also be working with the administrative team on completing a stakeholder survey and also going through a strategic planning process. In June, the Governing Board approved a Memorandum of Understanding between all MHPS regions. The intent of that MOU is to provide regions a unified purpose. It has communication protocols in the MOU for communication that relates to the regions as a whole. It also has directions as far as when we look at residency, we have individuals moving between regions, how services for those individuals would be funded, and an agreement to work together to define and gather outcome information. And I wanted to note, as Marty did earlier, that he was elected vice chair for the CIC Governing Board.
Good for them.
Yeah, we're excited to have him in that role. For community services, as you know, our office has collaborated with several community agencies and county departments in respect to Crestview Mobile Home Park and re-implementing the relocation assistance for those residents. As you mentioned, Rick, we've got 10 current applications. Staff were meeting this morning to develop a plan on following up with folks that we haven't heard from in about 2 weeks, so we'll be reaching out to, I believe, about 9 applicants. And we're expecting another application to be coming in any day, and then so we would have 2 households that we have not received an application on based off of the list that we received from Bill Talbot is what we're working from. I have been participating in the Opioid Task Force, which was a subcommittee of the Mental Health Criminal Justice Task Force, and something that we're working on right now is working with Dr. Gasala, she's with primary health care in Marshalltown, to have her come and do grand rounds with local physicians. Dr. Gasala has a medication assisted treatment program that she administers. She works in partner with Satusi in Marshalltown, and what that program is doing is offering medications to individuals to help with opioid withdrawal symptoms, as well as in incorporating counseling and therapy recovery services. So we're excited to have her come and speak with local physicians. She's on maternity leave right now, so we're waiting until she gets back. So I anticipate this will occur in the fall, late fall, early winter. And she's also agreed to speak at a town hall meeting. We'd like to be able to invite the public for her to be able to talk about the program, as well as have other speakers who can talk about the opioid epidemic. We do know that it's been difficult to get numbers on for our area on individuals affected by this, but we do know in speaking with primary health care that they do have folks coming from Story County to Marshalltown to receive treatment. This quarter, as Brett mentioned, some information that Erin Reworth has been helping him with. I did note that she had completed 114 interviews with veterans or surviving spouses, and also that she attended the VA Spring School in April with Brett. We've had service coordination staff participate in benefits training. That's for Social Security benefits and associated medical benefits. And then we recently, just July 1, are going through a system update with our CSN system. We all went through training on that in, I think it was May. So we're going through a few struggles, bumps in the road with that system, but hopefully getting it figured out. Our CSN is a statewide database system, so most counties in the state are using it. So it's pretty pertinent to the work that we do. A lot of our information gets put into that system. And then staff, as we're able, we continue to participate in any of the staff development trainings offered through the county.
Outstanding. Carla, we had a meeting yesterday. You and I and Deb from the county, members of the region, and members from Mary Greeley Hospital. Would you please update the board on generally the conversation in that meeting and what you expect to have happening next?
You bet. Mary Greeley would like to put together a proposal to open up a transitional living center, which is a program that the region currently funds in three other areas of the region. It's for folks who need a stable place to go. Maybe they're in need of housing. They're needing to get connected to medical benefits. It's up to a 90-day program. Mary Greeley is interested in offering that service. They would be looking at they have their current transitional living program, so we'd be looking at moving that program essentially into this.
Which is not in a handicap accessible location at this point.
It is not that. So the location that is being talked about and discussed is the Hazel RCF that is operated by Actime Life Services. So we're still looking at that location. In addition to those transitional living center services, they would be looking at offering crisis stabilization services, which is typically a 3 to 5 day stay for an individual that's experiencing a crisis. So they're looking at a combination of a service being provided at that facility. What we're going to be working on next is getting a meeting set up for Mary Greeley to be able to go in and tour, look at the Hazel RCF, and make notes of any updates or changes that need to be done within the facility to be able to accommodate those services. So Deb and I will be working on reaching out to Optime and our facilities management, Mary Greeley, and regional staff to go over and have that meeting at the group home.
Yeah, so thank you, Carla. I'd add two things, and Deb asked if there was anything you wanted to add from that meeting yesterday. The two real takeaways that I got is really working toward a July 1st, 2018 operational provision of these services, and the reality that we're keeping Optime informed every step of the way to give Optime plenty of notice if we go down that road. And the second thing that I heard, and Carla, I just asked you to comment on this if you heard the same thing, I was really excited to learn that Mary Greeley is viewing this as trying to expand their professional staff to the point that they could offer other area service providers the opportunity to get a few hours of service from a psychiatrist or people with different kind of credentials, that it's hard for different entities to employ a full-time person with what we know about what's happening with telepsychiatry right now, which I think I heard it's going to be a 30% drop in the rates that are reimbursed for telepsychiatry. It may be a great way to have a local provider that different service providers can buy in, you know, a few hours here, a few hours there. Mary Greeley has the wherewithal to possibly put together a program like that, especially if they had this contract. And so that was a real takeaway, a real potential positive that I heard coming out of yesterday.
Right, you are correct. Mary Greeley, it's been over a year ago, they had invited stakeholders together, and they had a facilitator. And from those meetings, two areas were identified, needing assistance with prescribers. Being able to obtain and retain prescribers is difficult, as well as in crisis services. So from that work group, that is something that Mary Greeley has been working on, is trying to bring on prescribers who would then have interest in being able to contract out their services with our local outpatient mental health providers. So I do know that Ierley Ball has reached out to Mary Greeley and expressed that they are interested in any future potential for a partnership there. And so, yeah, that is something that Mary Greeley is working on. I believe they just had a nurse practitioner come on July 1st, and the hope is once that person gets their feet under and everything, maybe there's potential to contract out for service there, too.
The only thing I would add to that, too, is I think what's helped solidify the partnership is those two areas that were identified through the Mental Health Summit then were incorporated into Mary Greeley's strategic plan. So the Board of Trustees there recognizes the need for continued mental health services and the role that Mary Greeley can play in providing those services. And so they have the one full-time psychiatrist on the unit, two nurse practitioners now, and then they're looking at trying to recruit a second psychiatrist. So I think we're starting to see that pendulum swing from the use of the telehealth to back to the in-person, face-to-face kinds of prescribers. So hopefully that success will come true here in the county and for the region as a whole.
Super. Thank you. Questions for Carla Dead?
Have you had any contact or conveyed this information, or are you planning soon to, like, Linda Hansen? I know she's with Primary Health, but also she's on part of the Mental Health NAMI team. And I had occasion within about the last week or so to run into both Linda and Sumin Pak, who is the president of NAMI right now, and they brought up again about the difficulty in getting these referrals for transitional or stabilization over to Hopewell, is it called? Okay. So this will be great news for them.
Yeah. Yep, we can share that with them. This meeting just took place yesterday. And have that first. And we will be meeting with Hope Wellness Center. I had helped to facilitate bringing many of the outpatient providers together. And one of the areas that we talked about was Hope Wellness Center and some concerns there. So we're going to be getting back together, and we're bringing Hope Wellness Center. We're going to be inviting them to come visit with us.
Well, I appreciate that. Good reaching out to them. Thank you.
Yeah, and so I took it as and I'd be curious to see if you guys had the same thing. I took it as a really positive meeting yesterday with a real chance that we can move forward. Did you guys feel the same thing?
Go ahead, sir. Well, I think we've been talking about this now for well over a year, and I think the information and the feedback that we get from the community and the other providers, and including medical providers, really kind of brings this home, and I think it really helped to bring us all back together yesterday to put together at least a timeline, and then wait for Mary Greeley to put that proposal together so that can be looked at and implemented here soon.
And we've been working hard to keep the neighborhood informed where this building is located.
Yep.
As we learn more, we'll work on keeping service providers informed. Yep. And then the final thing that I would say to this board, no proposal's been made yet. Right. The county's role in all of this is going to be as a landlord. We own the building, and for us to make decisions about what happens to that building, what kind of rent is charged in that building, utilities in that building. That's going to be the county's role. The region, all said and done, will be some type of funder of the services. And the way it's looking right now, Mary Greeley is moving toward assuming the role of being the provider of services in that. Again, we'll see a proposal when we see a proposal. It's not us that's creating it. It's Mary Greeley that's creating it. We simply have been part of conversations at this point.
That's true, and especially with the passage of Senate File 504 that went through the state legislature this last session, that the county has to be very careful about what role they play in mental health services, with having the region be the main funder, the primary funder, and the county not paying for any actual services. But we can work in this way with our property to help the provider of services.
Yeah, there's no state law yet against the county being a landlord in a situation like this. There is a state law that says we can't fund services directly. So just something for you guys to keep in mind. You'll hear more about this. If it continues to advance, you'll hear more about it. Since we're coming out of that meeting yesterday, I wanted the board to be informed.
Yeah, thank you.
Anything else for Carla?
No, I appreciate all the conversations we've had in my time on the board. This has been something that has been discussed topically and conceptually, but it sounds like you might be getting a little bit of traction. It's no small thing that Mary Greeley has got to the point that they would like to pursue it additionally. And the fact that you have to know the structure that they're using in, was it Douglas? That is clearly one of your older homes in Ames, yeah, the old part of the town. It is not suited for what they're using it for. And I can see their interest in just that alone. So I hope that this bears fruit. I can't say enough. Thank you for all that has been done.
Yeah, so definitely 2 years we've been having these conversations off and on, and it's really kind of come full circle. I took yesterday as a really, really good sign, and now we've got to continue to try to push to get toward an answer. It's the first time I've heard the concept of an actual starting date, even though it's a year from now, of an actual starting date for providing the services. So, what did you guys to be aware of? Absolutely.
Could I request you the fact that they've now served their eviction notices? Have you noticed any increase in kind of the residents contacting you and asking for the help? Or, you know, what are we going to do now? The next step?
I don't think that they increased the calls or the volume with our office. Like I said, we're following up with 9 folks, and it's been about 2 weeks or more since we've heard from them. And I know that notice that they think were served just early last week, maybe. Mm-hmm. So
September 15th date.
Right, yeah. But we're going to certainly try and do our part in reaching out to folks and encouraging them to be making their plans and trying to help them through that process. But I guess we just need to encourage people as much as we can to be making decisions and trying to do what they can to move, certainly.
Yeah. So what I would say in relation to Crestview, Loris, is if there's any members of the media in the audience today, apparently there was a fire out at Crestview this weekend where a couple of abandoned trailers somehow mysteriously caught on fire.
Yeah.
Thank you,
Carla.
Good job, Carla. Nick, did you have something before we go to next St. Lawrence?
Oh, no, sorry. Yeah. Thank you.
Yep. Okay. Next is the FY17 final financial report. Get us out of here, Barkley.
Okay, let's finish this off.
Thank you, Arden.
Thanks, Arden.
Thank you, Mrs. Arden.
This is Brian.
Well, grant me my rural roots.
I know. Final report for the fiscal year. I did also update your budget history books with the final information, a little bit more detailed than this, but basically same information. Overall, this shows where we ended the fiscal year. We spent 86.7% of the amended budgeted expenses.
So what we expected to spend, we only spent 87% of that.
Right. A couple of big factors there. There was $1.8 million in projects left with secondary roads that didn't get spent out during the fiscal year, and a tandem truck that just got bought beginning of this year
that we talked about last year, which would explain the 95% ending fund balance in secondary.
Some of that, yeah. And then 1.19 left in capital projects for the research park. So that's the learning center, which will be part of the amendment that I'm going to bring forward so that we can spend those dollars as they continue to go. We actually budgeted the 1.5 to receive and to spend all in 1 year, and I think we were all pretty aware that that wasn't going to happen, but we didn't amend it to reflect that. So we spent $387,000 on that project.
Well, we wanted conservation to have the flexibility right. that they could go ahead and get the work done, get it done.
Yeah. And I'm going to skip to revenues real quick. We had $412,000 more in revenues than we anticipated, but still only 96.5% of the amended budget. So. Fund balances. We ended the fund balance of the year with 32% in the general fund, which was 7% over what we anticipated in our last amendment. I usually tell you guys I expected to be about 6% higher than our budget, and we were 7.
And that's healthy now, right? So we right. want 25% right. in there. Right. We struggled for many years to get to 25%. Right. We're finding it really healthy right. there. We just need to manage it.
Right. Well, and that is after the assignment and the commitment of right. funds. So, and then supplementals is at 41.9, which is 10% over what we amended budgetarily. That one I like to have a little bit more in because I just made a big check last week for insurance, so that's a large amount. Mental health fund came in at 30%. Rural fund came in at 21%. I want to make a couple comments about that. That made me really happy because that's always a fund that is kind of limited in its resources. Local option sales tax dollars were $341,000 higher than we anticipated. So that meant that our actual year-end analysis of that is there was $136,500 more that was available for general county betterment. So we ended the year with $187,134 unallocated dollars in the local option sales tax.
And we thought we were bumping all the way up against it.
We thought we were going to be negative on that, or right. real close to it. So, yeah, that was a plus. And then, yeah, as you mentioned, the secondary road fund came in at almost 96% ending fund balance, which... Any questions?
Questions for Mark?
That's a good story.
It puts us in a really, really strong position.
That's
we can work to maintain this kind of position. It allows us to deal with any unforeseen issues that we might have come. And I can't underscore, you lived through the days that was not true here in Story County, and I think of a little $150,000 leak above your office. Was it 4 years that it could be fixed? We don't need to have situations where we can't go replace air conditioners in the animal control mm-hmm. area when we need to. This allows us to do that. Thank you, Lisa. Let's see. I think that takes us all the way to public forum number 2, opportunity for members of the public to address topics not on today's agenda. Board won't take any action because we can't, but we might in the future. Anybody wishing to address us? You guys can put on your citizen hat and come address us.
Thank you.
Liaison assignments, it is Marty's turn to go first.
Marty is just going to skip over. We got things going on. But I would point out the fact that there is movement out of the DuPont site. It looks like they're moving to a new staging level, possibly, which might lead, I suspect, to an operational.
And I love DuPont, but that's in the category of I'll believe it when I see it.
That's right. But they are doing tangibles. Other than that, I will just let it go for another day.
Okay. Morris.
I just really want to mention two things. First of all, last week I had brought forward a proposal about getting some statistics about fireworks, and I was widely advised maybe I should talk to the gentleman who the department would have to gather them.
Sure, I'm a little protective of that kind of stuff.
That's okay. That's all right. You know, I have nice tea, and one of the things that we discussed was this. And so when he feels that there's no need to gather those statistics unless there would be a specific need to, you know, in the future. So we're going to, based on his advice, I'm good there. I just wanted it in preparation. I guess if we need it, we'll get it, okay?
I am headed out to visit the jail. They're going to let me out, the theory is. Okay, on Thursday afternoon. Yeah, they have some computer programs out there that are not standard, and it came up during the website design, and even though I'm not on the committee anymore because they're into the actual development phase, I did want to see some of these, so I'm going out.
So you're not on that work group anymore.
I'm not on that work group anymore. So that's an inside joke here. So anyway, but yes, but I am going to go spend about an hour out there. They're in the central, kind of the central area. And the Story County Housing Trust Fund is meeting tonight, and they have an opportunity to get another $40,000 in matching funds if they can raise an extra $10,000. This has come up very suddenly. They only have until, or we, I guess I should say, only have until the end of July to do it. $7,400 raised so far. When I talked to the chair of the Housing Trust Fund last night, and I said, well, if I could go back and ask the county, you know, what we might be able to do, and they actually want to go after private. They feel that they want to try and solicit from the banks, and $2,500 that they've already gotten from one bank. Okay, and then everybody's welcome to contribute. The churches, one church has kicked in just a small amount or whatever. So that's really key, because this leveraging is 4-to-1. So, and how this came about is Iowa Finance Authority got some extra money. And so anyway, that's the
big. Are we formalized as a housing trust fund now, or are we still in the formation stage?
The Housing Trust Fund Task Force.
Right.
Okay. I believe this is maybe our last meeting, because the trust fund has been submitted and established with 4 members. All right.
But they haven't met yet, or they haven't?
I don't think they've met yet. I don't know. You tomorrow morning, right? Or
Jason Paul has requested to sit down with me?
Yes. Uh-huh. Yes. Jason is the, he's the task force co-coordinator with Eileen. Jason is the gentleman who came.
Right. Jason and Eileen came, and those are the two that made the request that I come visit with them, and then
Correct.
Eileen can't be there tomorrow.
Okay, got it. So anyway, so there will just be, it's my understanding tomorrow who will be meeting with are the actual 4 directors.
Okay. You know more than me then.
Okay. That's all I see on it. So, all right.
Okay.
So anyway, that's kind of what's going on. I don't know if they want to talk to you about
I think it's an 8 a.m. tomorrow morning,
yeah.
So I'll be glad to tell you.
At 9? Yeah. Okay. And we meet tonight at 5, okay. The Trust Fund Task Force, but I think we're winding down.
Okay.
That's it.
Sorry. Super. Thank you. Anything else for the good of the order? If not, I take a motion to adjourn.
So moved.
Okay.
All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
And we are adjourned.
Aye.
Yeah, I think it is an automatic aye.